Ideas and opinions. The LBC app free now from your app store. I'm done for the week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news show on LBC. I'll be with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I remain to be convinced about the wisdom of helping the most disgraced and ridiculous Tories of the last 20 years to rehabilitate themselves by embracing the racism of Nigel Farage's reform, even if they come from ethnic minorities themselves. But Nadeem Zahawi made such an absolute plum of himself on Nick's programme today that I'm beginning to think I might start inviting some of them on. I want, therefore, to begin with a question that takes us back to Jim Ratcliffe. Cliff's hideous comments and utter failure to apologise. The long queue of out-and-out racists or crypto-racists pretending that it's all about the misuse of the word colonised or that the stats don't matter notwithstanding. What's really going on here?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the former Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has told LBC that Sir Jim Ratcliffe was right to make controversial comments about immigration. The co-owner of Manchester United has apologised after claiming the UK has been colonised by immigrants. Sir Jim has faced widespread criticism and the Football Association are reportedly examining the remarks. But Mr Zahawi, who recently defected from the Tories to Reform UK, has told us he thanks Sir Jim for raising the issue.
His misspeaking has actually raised the debate to a level where we're actually, people like Nigel are saying, hold on a second, let's talk about this. Let's just discuss, is this really sustainable, or should we have a big, big change in our country about how we deal with migration?
You can read and see more of Nadeem Zahawi's exclusive interview on the LBC app. A lawyer representing families of the victims of a paedophile nursery worker has told LBC they want to see tighter vetting rules in wake of the case. Vincent Chan was sentenced to 18 years in prison after admitting 56 offences, some of which were carried out at Bright Horizons Nursery in West Hampstead. That branch has since closed. Legal expert Alison Miller represents families whose children attended the nursery and has spoken to LBC.
What the families in this case have been calling for is a system whereby parental concerns could be given and tracked by an independent body so that there would be someone to complain to other than the nursery provider who's, you know, it may not be in their interest to take a long-term approach to make sure that staff in the nursery setting are properly looked at over time to make sure there are no red flags.
Bright Horizons says keeping children safe is their most important responsibility, adding that Vincent Chan broke that trust. Leaders from around 50 countries, including Keir Starmer, are heading for talks at a major security summit in Germany. They're expected to discuss defence and relations with the United States at a time when America's commitment to NATO has been questioned. The government has published its first guidance for schools in England on supporting children who are questioning their gender. It says schools should not initiate steps towards social transitioning, as such pupils changing their name, pronouns or clothes. And the government is to consult on plans to ban vaping in cars carrying children. It'll also cover school playgrounds and outside of hospitals in England. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 21 at 10,423. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK today. Bright spells and some heavy showers for the south of England, cool and dry elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Very good morning to you. 4 minutes after 11 is the time. And so, I mean, I don't know if it's reluctantly the right word. Reluctantly, we return our attention to the racism of Jim Ratcliffe, who pays zero income tax in this country on his personal
in Cumber is furious with the immigrants who paid last year an estimated £17 billion. Should we start with a few numbers? How wrong was his figure yesterday? Do you think he was out by 150%, 250%, or 350%? He was out by 350%, which, of course, doesn't stop the likes of Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail or Nadeem Zahawi explaining, no, he was actually right. He was 350% wrong. But he was actually right. And of course, the other element of this conversation that was completely missing yesterday is that immigration is plummeting at the moment. Annual net migration went down by over 100,000. It practically halved. The surge came after the Brexit that all these clowns voted for, because you had to replace people who had been told to sling their hook with people that you would shut your eyes and pretend weren't then required to come here. Many of whom, of course, brought families, which I'm fine with, but the likes of Nadeem Zahawi and friends, Dick Littlejohn, apparently are not. There's this wonderful hypocrisy and dishonesty from these men and women, because how can you integrate if you're not working age? If you're going to come here as a child on your own or as an old age pensioner, what does integration look like? So the only people who can be properly invited to integrate by, I don't know, for example, having a son who gets elected mayor of your capital city three times on the run, that they are working age. But of course, idiots and racists like Zahawi say fighting age. Oh, you can't call him a racist because he's from an ethnic minority himself. Yes, I can. And I just did. I want to focus on that today. Not just him, because goodness me. Did I get the time wrong at the top of the show again today? Oh, well done, mate. It's 6 minutes after 10. Good Lord, imagine that. Imagine only getting 2 hours of me today. There'd be petitions in Parliament. There'd be marches on the streets. People would be in Leicester Square with homemade banners complaining, what do we want? More James. When do we want it? Now. 350% wrong. How wrong was I when I said the time was 6 minutes after 11 a moment ago? The point, of course, is this. When Jim Ratcliffe talks about immigration, I don't know whether or not he is a massive racist or just a massive hypocrite, but I do know that they dream of a day when businesses are free to be even more rapacious. I'm going to tell you a story, and it is a fascinating story, and it's a story you may already know. It's the story of the New York meatpacking district that was relayed to me yesterday by an absolute genius called Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, which celebrates its 25th anniversary this year. New York's meatpacking district was also the subject of some extraordinary investigative journalism by a writer called Upton Sinclair, whose work you are actually familiar with, even if you don't know it, because he wrote a book called Oil that got turned into a film called There Will Be Blood, starring Daniel Day-Lewis and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson and produced by, I only discovered as I was preparing to conduct the interview yesterday, Eric Schlosser. And Eric was reminding me yesterday, because I read the book 20 years ago, he was reminding me yesterday that the cow is unique in the annals of slaughterhouses. So chickens and pigs are of a sufficiently similar size for the production process, the slaughter process, to have been largely automated. Because chickens and pigs are usually more or less the same size. You can use machines to, forgive me, to dismember them. But cows are not, I learned, or they're too big for the process. So cows, the meatpacking process, the dismembering, the slaughtering of cattle in the United States of America is still conducted by human beings, by a long line, a production line of human beings with sharp knives. And the people that own these companies make more money the faster that line moves. This isn't exactly rocket science. The faster the line moves, the more beef comes out at the end of it, and the more money the owners make. But there's another factor to these calculations. And that, of course, is that the faster the line moves, the more people get hurt, the more people get injured. So the faster the line moves, the more money people make. The faster the line moves, the more people get hurt. Now, you could loosely say the more money people like Jim Ratcliffe make, and the more people like you and me, or our friends and family, get hurt. right? That's just counting. I don't know how much of a racist Jim Ratcliffe is, but I do know that a politician like Nigel Farage, a kind of Timu Donald Trump, is deeply desirable to a businessman like Jim Ratcliffe because he thinks he'll be able to make even more money by removing protections and regulations from even more workers. Trump has done it in the United States of America. These are the kind of people who hate minimum wage. And they hate the fact that the production line has been slowed down by health and safety legislation, what they like to call red tape, which is the reason why they're not allowed to send your kids up a chimney anymore. All of these things are observable and as bad in many ways today, particularly in the meatpacking world, they are as bad today as they were 100 years ago. So I don't know whether people like Jim Ratcliffe are embracing the racism of people like Nigel Farage and Dick Littlejohn because they actually hate brown faces, or they just love the idea of a politician so morally corrupt that they will help him become even richer. They will help his businesses have an even faster production line. And in many ways, if I was brown-skinned, it wouldn't matter, because the hatred feels real regardless of whether it's motivated by bigotry or greed. And let's not overlook the possibility of it being motivated by both. For example, I mean, should we deport refugees who lie about their tax affairs and are then required to make enormous multi-million pound settlements to cover up the fact that they had been well dodgy, shall we say, in their original dealings? Should we deport those people? Well, of course not. Not if they're citizens. Should be treated like anybody else. That's what people like me believe. But it's not what people like Nadeem Zahawi believe. Yesterday, if you weren't listening, we had a beautiful conversation about, and I use the word beautiful advisedly, you'd have to listen back to it to understand why I use that word, with people who are on the sharp end of the return of racism, the return of public racism. I am not on the sharp end of it, except, of course, when I open my inbox and see abuse there, although not as much as I used to see, almost sadly. But I am not brown, I am not black, I am not from an ethnic minority. And yesterday's programme was dedicated to the inalienable fact that if you are, Jim Ratcliffe is talking about you. He's not talking about unintegrated or recent arrival, because he doesn't know. You can't look at a lineup of people and say, immigrant, not immigrant, not immigrant, immigrant. You can't do that. All you can say is white, not white, not white, 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 not white, white. Which one do you like? Oh, I don't like the not white ones. And that is why I'm going to conduct a conversation today, and I can only, of course, do it with your help, that we have never conducted before. And it's a conversation, at least, well, every time I say we've never conducted it before, you drop me a little email to say, actually, you did it on March the 12th, 2021. So we may well have done it before, but I can't remember doing it, and I can't remember being motivated to do it in quite the way that I am today. So Suella Braverman has joined Farage's outfit, hasn't she? It's hard to keep up. There's someone called Zia Yusuf, who no one has ever voted for, but is popping up all over the place to represent the party that hates people who haven't been democratically elected. Various former Tories have turned up on their benches without holding by-elections, which is odd because Nigel Farage is a man who thinks that whenever people defect, they should have a by-election. But the prevalence, if you like, or the prominence of people like Nadeem Zahawi, pushed front and centre today on Nick Ferrari's show, where he, as we'll discover shortly, but not with undue attention, made an absolute muppet of himself. Because once you embrace racist rhetoric, whatever ethnic background you come from, you become, by rights, a liar. You inevitably become a liar. On this occasion, a man who's frightened of tired brown people. So much so that he thinks we should call in the army to corral tired brown people. If you think I'm exaggerating, I'll share those comments with you later. But this is the bit that makes me... Well, I think we know each other well enough by now for you to know that my curiosity excites me. So I don't want to say I'm excited by a subject matter, but my curiosity, when it kicks in on a certain level, when I'm really fascinated and not a little confused by something that is going on around us, something that is going on in our worlds, it often makes, if I do my job half decently, it often makes for a fascinating conversation. And you know that often the best conversations that we ever have involve me learning stuff as the vessel through which you often learn stuff as well. Or, of course, you teach stuff to the rest of us. Some breaking news for you, that the High Court has ruled that the government's ban on Palestine action was unlawful. And you can hear more on that story imminently this hour of the programme. But we will then get stuck into the phone in about why people like, and you can add to this list if you want. I'm going to do it off the top of my head. So you've got Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi, two of the most disgraced and ridiculous Tories to have held office over the last 20 years, currently enjoying or at least pursuing a form of rehabilitation by embracing the obvious and undeniable racism of Nigel Farage, who inevitably came out yesterday to support the man who was 350% wrong with his comments about migration, and who deliberately used the word colonised, despite the fact, of course, that immigration has plummeted in recent years, having rocketed as a consequence directly of the Brexit that he supported. It is people from ethnic minorities that I obviously think twice about calling racist, but only twice, because, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a racist duck, regardless of what colour the feathers might be. And that line that we have encountered a million times on this programme in the past, "I don't mean you," is one of those great lies of the English language that could be up there with the checks in the post or similar, couldn't it? "I don't mean you." Of course they mean you. Of course when Jim Ratcliffe talks about migrants colonising this country, he means people who look like Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi. You know that, I know that. Does he know that? And that's what I want to talk about. So if we were to make our little list of people whose position confuses, you are looking at Suella Braverman. Again, one of the least competent and most unpleasant outwardly people to hold office in this country in recent years. You've got Nadeem Zahawi, who in a normal country would have been laughed out of public life forever for a whole heap of reasons, even without his hideous dealings with the Inland Revenue. So what you have here is a bloke who was fined millions by the Inland Revenue for attempting to avoid tax, speaking out in support of the racism of a bloke who moved to Monaco to avoid tax. It's incredible, right? But they really care about integration and this country. Nothing says integration like trying to avoid tax or successfully avoiding tax by becoming an immigrant. I'll say that again because sometimes I think I'm not the one that's going mad. Nothing says integration like either avoiding tax or becoming an immigrant to move to a country so you don't have to pay tax in the country that educated you, fed you, helped you build a business, in many ways created you, but which you turn your back on when you become a billionaire. Nothing says integration like that. 18 minutes after 10 is the time. I can't answer this question because I am white. Why do members of ethnic minorities so often and so enthusiastically embrace the racism of people like Nigel Farage and Jim Ratcliffe? Why, and I mean, the obvious analogy is Turkey's voting for Christmas, but it's more subtle than that. It must be more subtle than that. Do they honestly not realise? Do you honestly not realise? Do they honestly not realise that Ratcliffe is talking about, if not them specifically, then people who look like them? People who look like their parents, people who look like their children. Because when stormtroopers like ICE in the United States start goose-stepping up and down the streets, they don't stop to establish anything other than whether you look a bit foreign. Whether you look, well, foreign's not even the right word. Nadeem Zahawi doesn't look foreign. he just looks brown. Suella Braverman doesn't look foreign to me. She just looks brown. And it doesn't register as being significant in my brain on any conceivable level. But Jim Ratcliffe hates it. Sarah Poachin, Nigel Farage's mate, another MP, she hates it. She hates brown and black faces. So that's the perfect example, isn't it? So she can say that she hates brown and black faces in television adverts. And Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi don't realise that if she hates brown and black faces on television adverts, then she hates brown and black faces in the Houses of Parliament. She hates brown and black faces in political parties. If you hate brown and black faces in a bloody car advert, how on earth could you argue that you don't hate brown and black faces where you work? Or when you're watching the Parliament Channel, when you're watching PMQs. Oh, I really hate brown and black faces when I'm watching a nappy advert, but I love them when I'm watching PMQs. Hey, it's absurd. David Lammy knows that she's talking about him. How come Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi don't? And that is an answer you can only help me with if you are from an ethnic minority, if you are one of the people that understands Jim Ratcliffe was talking about them. However successful you are, however, quote, integrated you are, however clear you are about the fact that when you say fighting age instead of working age, you're whipping up racial hatred. None of this is debatable. None of this is complicated. Anybody arguing otherwise is either racist or pretending to be for clicks and giggles because it's become commercially attractive. So what is it that's going on in the minds of people who are from ethnic minorities siding with and joining in with attacks on ethnic minorities? I don't get that, but I bet you do. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need. It's 10:21.
LBC. At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
At Lidl, we value getting everyone round the table this pancake day. Make sure to top up on toppings from the fresh produce retailer of the year, us. Such as a four-pack of lemons and fun-sized apples, both for just 69p with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. Offer ends 18/2/26.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away, so help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The absurdity and the idiocy of Nadeem Zahawi's comments on this radio station earlier notwithstanding, of course, the poison that underlies these contributions to public discourse is poison that somebody like me thinks that somebody like him is being exposed to. He's adamant that they're not. So why do members of ethnic minorities embrace the racism of people like Jim Ratcliffe and Nigel Farage? Why? Sean's in Dunstable. Sean, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm a first-time caller. It's
Welcome.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show for a long time, particularly on the whole immigration thing and a discourse. And I believe that these people, particularly the ones in political power or have any kind of allegiance or political party, a lot of them are just saving their own skins. They think they'll be safe. You can see in America with Trump and the Latino group, they were all for Trump, and then they realized they were sold down the river. A lot of their family members were deported unfairly in most cases, because a lot of them actually were waiting for citizenship or had citizenship.
Of course.
So the problem I see is people look in the mirror of brown or whatever complexion of ethnicity, non-whites, I will say, yeah?
Yes.
I want to be, you know, I'm trying to be politically correct here. A bit nervous as well. But they hate themselves. They look in the mirror. They can't stand that they're not white. They're so desperate to be accepted that they hate themselves. And if you hate yourselves, you hate your group.
It's heavy stuff. I mean, it fits
Stockholm syndrome. It's Stockholm.
So it fits the parameters. And that's why you'd be drawn to the right wing, I suppose, because the acceptance you crave comes from usually people further to the right than Genghis Khan in many cases. And you speak as a member of an member of an ethnic minority yourself.
Yeah.
I could never say what you just said, could I, really?
I'm Irish, West Indian, Jamaican, yeah?
I like that combination.
Mother's British-born. Thank you very much. It's not something I'm proud of, because I didn't choose it.
Sure.
I didn't choose it, but I embrace my roots, okay? I love the Irish, love Jamaicans, love everybody. I love decent people who respect the culture. I think it's not an issue of race, James. I think most people who appear racist in their comments, not all of them, but the ones that are drawn into all of the drama, I believe they are fighting in their mind a culture war. It's not about black and white. It's about you're not fitting into the system that we believe you should fit into. You're bringing your religions here. You're bringing your traditions here.
I can see why that possibly disturbs some people, although, you know, the import of Christianity from the Middle East seems to be something that most of us have become comfortable with in the 1500 years since it happened. But you know, and I know, that people like Ratcliffe are saying there are too many brown faces here. You know that when Farage complains about people speaking foreign on trains, he doesn't mean his daughter's speaking German. He means brown-skinned people and black-skinned people. He means people with complexions like yours, not people with complexions like mine. And the level of self-delusion you would need?
Self-hate.
That's a hefty accusation, isn't it?
They hate themselves because they... You know what it is, James? I'll be honest with you. I can only say this from, my anecdotal experiences, right?
Yeah.
I'm born here. My mother's born here. My father's Irish, born in England. My grandmother and my grandfather are the only in my family that came from Jamaica, and they were invited here.
That's another point that's been missed during all of these conversations. So Satnam Sangira writes brilliantly about it in the Times today. There's two bits missing from all of the sort of ridiculous facilitating of Jim Ratcliffe's racism. The first is that he's profoundly wrong about the background to most migrant families. And the second, of course, is that immigration or net migration at the moment is plummeting, which is going to damage the country. The country is going to be damaged by net migration plummeting. And yet the people who are either being now openly racist or pretending that they're not racist and claiming that they've got legitimate concerns are ramping up their rhetoric. Migration is coming down at a rate of knots, and the rhetoric is being ramped up. I mean, you rang in to make sense of the first question, but I can't make much sense of that either, except that it is literally all they've got to sell, and people like Ratcliffe want it because it will remove protections from workers to have a Timu Trump in power and provide people like him with an opportunity to avoid tax on even higher earnings.
I'll just say this before you next caller comes.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree completely with what you just said. But a lot of it stems to when there are good times in the UK. Okay, I'm 53 soon. So I've had quite a bit of experience being born, going through the system, the education system, living in various areas. When I moved to Watford in 1987, I was the only black kid in the school. I was the only, and I say black because no one's going to say, oh, look, there's a,
yeah.
No one's accepted me as the Irish side. They look at me, I'm brown, doesn't matter what your father is, they just see brown. That's fine, I've learned to accept that. But I was the only brown kid in the school. And you know, there was no racism at all. It was more people were so curious. They've never been this close to a black person other than on the television. And what they see on the television is from the 80s, the 70s, the 90s, black people on TV, seemingly criminals in episodes of The Bill. you got the neighbor next door, love thy neighbor.
And then you see faces like yours in adverts as an attempt to actually undermine the racist stereotyping of the 70s and 80s. And people like Farage's mate Poaching have a hissy fit about that, about people with complexions like yours turning up in car adverts. So, I mean, look, self-hatred is the first thing on the list. I don't think it's something I can say. Maybe I can. Maybe I'm being a little bit too mealy-mouthed, a little bit too woke. I just feel that it's far too hefty an accusation to lay at the feet of people like Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi as a white man. But maybe that's me being a victim of my own. I don't think prejudices is quite the right word, but opinions probably is. Thank you, Sean. It's a perfect start. 10:30 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The High Court has ruled a UK decision to ban Palestine Action as a terror group was unlawful. Judges have ruled it's a significant interference with the right to freedom of speech, but the group will remain a proscribed organisation pending a government appeal. The former Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has told LBC that Sir Jim Ratcliffe was right to make controversial comments about immigration. The co-owner of Manchester United has since apologised for claiming the UK has been colonised by immigrants. And Sir Keir Starmer will join more than 50 world leaders at a major security conference in Germany later. It's the first such meeting since President Trump threatened to take control of Greenland. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK, some bright spells and heavy showers for the south of England, cold and dry elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
With a Little Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Little Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Little, more to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability, ends 25th of Feb, 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/LPTV.
That's it, we need a bigger car.
Smart speaker, what's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great, and it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker, search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Attention dogs. This is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:33, and it's really tricky. If you're wondering why we've not done any phone-ins on it in the past, this headline here probably explains to you. Palestine Action ban ruled unlawful, but group remains proscribed for now. So you wouldn't be able to come onto this programme to talk about either hunger strikes or Palestine action in general without me and Eleanor being terrified that you were about to commit a crime. So, I, for good or for ill, we've steered a course of reporting rather than taking calls. And it is to Fraser Knight that we turn now for a report on the very latest development. I've kind of just given the game away, but three judges at the High Court this morning ruling what, Fraser?
They've ruled that the proscription of Palestine Action as a terrorist group in the UK, James, was unlawful. In fact, they said it was disproportionate, and therefore the Home Secretary should look again at this. Now, as you say, this doesn't mean that that prescription has been reversed. In fact, the judges have given some more time for the government to make submissions back to the court. And we've heard from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, that she plans to appeal this judgment from the High Court. But certainly outside the building right now, there's a couple of hundred people here, once again holding up signs that say that they are supporters of Palestine Action. A really challenging picture right now. There's been more than 2,000 people arrested since the prescription came in July last year, and there are still lots of police officers around here, but the future of those cases that are already in the criminal justice system are up in the air. What happens next? The Home Secretary saying she is very disappointed with this judgment after the co-founder had challenged it, saying it infringed on human rights around the freedom of expression, the freedom of assembly. I am just going to read you a short summary of what the judge said inside. She did say that a very small number of Palestine Action's activities did amount to acts of terrorism, but she said for these and for Palestine Action's other criminal activities, the general criminal law remains available. And she said the scale of those activities that they might have deemed to have been terrorist had not yet reached the scale and the level to actually prescribe that group as a whole. So it's a very significant move. It's one that the hundreds of people outside are celebrating, but still a bit of time to go. That group still prescribed under UK law right now.
And when will the next chapter in this extraordinary story be written, Fraser?
So I understand there's about a week that the government's been given to make more submissions to the court. So there will be another hearing that is held, and then we'll have to see what happens after that. It'll be up to the judges to decide whether they... Because there was four grounds that the Palestine Action co-founder had put forward to the court. She only won on two of them, and still there will be a bit more time to go, a bit more legal arguments before there is a final say on whether Palestine Action remains a terrorist organisation under UK law.
Thank you very much indeed, Fraser Knight, live from the High Court, where, as you just heard, the government has, Palestine Action has won its High Court challenge over the ban on them, the High Court finding that the ban was unlawful. But for the avoidance of doubt and by way of explaining why we won't be digging deeper into this issue as a phone-in topic today, it is still a proscribed organisation. Therefore, support for it, publicly expressed support for it, is still unlawful. Such are the vagaries of the British legal system. They may not even be vagaries. I don't really understand them. That's why I use the word vagaries. Neither today do I understand how members of ethnic minorities or brown-skinned Britons, black-skinned Britons, can be embracing the obvious racism of people like Jim Ratcliffe and, of course, Nigel Farage. Because it seems to me to be... And you've seen it in the United States of America. You've seen people now being rounded up and incarcerated on an industrial scale, by the way. And that's another piece of the jigsaw that Eric Schlosser reminded me of yesterday, the prison industrial complex. So all of these sort of latter-day concentration camps that are filling up with people who had followed the law in many cases with regard to migration and citizenship applications, tens and tens of thousands of people. Who do you think's making the money out of their incarceration? Who do you think is making money out of the incarceration of entirely innocent residents of the United States of America? We missed this. I'm so sorry. It's the same principle. It's always the same principle. They want to make more money, and they don't care. Human beings become like a crop whether they're chopping up carcasses in a slaughterhouse or whether they are sitting in a prison and money is being funneled to the companies and corporations that own the prisons. The profits go up with every incarceration. Every time I scoop someone off the street without due diligence or without just cause, every single time that happens, dollar signs appear in the back, in the eyes of Donald Trump supporters, of the richest people in the world. It's not even, I mean, what's the word I'm looking for? Secret. It's all happening in plain sight. And it makes, of course, the collusion and complicity of brown-skinned and black-skinned people in the obvious racism of people like Ratcliffe and Farage baffling to men like me, to people like me. It's not so baffling to many of you. Sadia is in Brent Cross. Sadia, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Oh, God, you've asked so many questions. Right.
Sorry, that's how I operate. You only have to answer one, really. How can people, how can victims, potential or actual victims of racism, ever side with the racists?
Okay. So I'm going to start off at this. Two points I'm going to make. The first one is about the question you just asked, and the other one is about integration. So to give background, in terms of my background, so I'm a proud British Pakistani Muslim, proud of all three components. I've always been surrounded by Caucasian people. So my degree was predominantly Caucasian. My corporate life was predominantly working with Caucasians. And then, so I always felt with, when I was with the company, when people spoke about institutional racism, I could never get it because I was like, well, actually, I feel I'm being judged by me and I'm one of them. Until a few years ago, I left the corporate world and decided to go alone and set my own business. And I do a various a number of community events in the area yeah. I live, and that's when I, because I wasn't part of the team or amongst them, I started feeling the racism and the racism that people spoke about that I could never see because I was very blinkered. I was as probably the likes of Nadine Zarai, all of one of them, because when you're in that bubble, suddenly the reflection you see yourself. Well, I saw myself as Sadia. I didn't see myself as a brown person.
Right.
And I think their vision becomes blinkered because they're like, oh, they're not talking about us because we're one of them. Until, and I think they will never see it until they're not, or until what they are trying to do, which is what I do, but I'm now trying to get into, without being racist, into the white man's lane. And suddenly I'm blocked and say, well, no, we'll accept you. As long as you stay in your lane, don't even imagine or think that you can come in our lane, because at that point, that's just not acceptable. Put it into context, James,
yeah.
So every year I do an event in August, which is to celebrate the independence of India and Pakistan. And we do it as a festival to organise, just to celebrate the great relationship between the British community, the Indian and the Pakistani community. And let's look at the positives of partition rather than the negatives. And last year I went above my grade, as the councillors told me, because I didn't want to do it in the local cricket club. I wanted to do it in the common. And I was then blocked by the councillors saying, well, actually, can't do that because we don't think it's relevant to the community. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, but which community? The community has South Asians, British, South Americans, everyone. This is an all-inclusive event. So I'm sorry, but who am I offending? And then I was told, well, actually, the language, I said, it's all in English. It's not a religious festival. It's an English festival. It's English. It's got music from all genres, and everyone is invited. It's a free event. I didn't get permission. I was blocked, although... this was the second point about integration. So it's not that we don't want to integrate. Actually, we do want to integrate, but the minute we try and come into your lane, and I don't mean this to you personally, James.
Of course. Thanks for clarifying that.
But the minute we try and do that, we're blocked. And give another example.
Hang on, just because... you could cite the examples of Zahawi and Braverman as successful integration. So what they haven't come up against is the attitudes that you've come up against because of class, is it? I mean, why would they not have experienced what you've experienced? Or, of course, if they have experienced it, they haven't noticed.
I don't think it's class, because I would argue that I'm with the same class as them.
Okay.
So I don't think it's class at all. I think it's because...
A couple of texters suggested that before you rang in, so I was just magpieing their comments.
No, I mean, I come from an upper middle class, so I don't think it's class at all. I think it's more about, because at the moment, they're going along with them. The minute they speak up, I mean, I'd like to see if the likes of how Nigel Farage and his kind of would react if suddenly Braverman and Naeem Slide said, do you know what? We want to head up reform. We're going to lead it because we know. I would like to see actually how welcoming, how they would be welcomed.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting. The base would be alienated, of course, but what is the base? And he's trying to extend it. He got into a little bit of bother yesterday for trying to use a synagogue to camouflage, in many ways, his own, well, many, many allegations of historic anti-Semitism that Nigel Farage has faced. We'll find out more about that story later in the programme. And in some ways, I suppose, signing up prominent ethnic minority politicians, albeit the most ridiculous and disgraced Tories, I also provides him with camouflage from the lifelong enthusiasm for base racism that Nigel Farage is perhaps best known for. Just to clear something up as well, because I'm educated by Satnam Sangira constantly. His books Empire Land and Empire World are stone-cold masterpieces, and I've had the privilege of a sneak preview of his latest book, which is about George Michael. That's why I love the guy. That's the sign of a proper postmodern brain, isn't it? I'm going to move from Empire to George Michael, and I've got a proof copy of Tonight the Music Seems So Loud, and I'm about 50 pages in, and I would urge you to order it now for when it comes out. I think this is important. You know Windrush. So in 1947, you had 4,000 overseas workers begged for, effectively, by the Ministry of Labour. Please, please come here. The narrative of coming here to help rebuild the country is a popular one, including, of course, among people who are embracing a sort of 21st century racism and sort of excusing themselves from that accusation by pointing out, usually in very sort of syrupy tones, that many people came here to rebuild the country. And while that is true, if you want to look at Windrush, and I don't think this is very widely known, despite the fact that both Satnam's books became bestsellers, nothing to do with the British recruitment drive. You had a troop ship docking at Kingston, Jamaica, to pick up British servicemen and take them home. And the captain put out a call for more passengers. It was literally that simple. I had an empty ship leaving Jamaica. Hundreds of people set sail for a new life in an unknown country, and they were legally entitled to. Black and Asian people were, for decades, allowed to come to Britain as their legal right as British citizens. Jim Ratcliffe accuses them of colonising this country, of which they were British citizens. You'd need to be entirely ignorant of the Windrush scandal, and I'm confident that Jim Ratcliffe is entirely ignorant of the Windrush scandal, to even flirt with the kind of language that people like Farage and Dick Littlejohn are either too thick to understand is disgusting, or delighted by, and therefore ignoring the fact that it is disgusting. 1948, you have a Nationality Act introduced. Anyone born in the Empire had the rights of a British citizen. Seriously, hands up if you knew that. Okay, no hands. No hands up if you think Jim Ratcliffe knows that. Crikey, less than no hands. Sorry, fewer. No. And that is the backdrop that we're talking about. I don't know whether Zahawi knows that. I don't know whether Braverman knows that. I don't know whether Zia Yusuf. A lot of you are telling me to point out that his first name is actually Mohammed. But why would I do that? That's like Donald Trump going Barack Hussein Obama, isn't it? I mean, you are accusing him of covering something up, and you're entitled to do that. But I don't think that's pertinent or relevant. You know, lots of people are known by their middle names. It was not christened Boris by his, but well, at least his first name was. I'm getting distracted. Back on to the question of what drives people with brown and black skin to side with racists like Jim Ratcliffe and Nigel Farage. 03456060973 is the number you need. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I'm really sorry. You have to fire the Chancellor. If I were Keir Starmer, I would be seriously considering using the last lever I can pull to try and show that I am changing and listening and trying to get on with things. And I would fire Rachel Reeves and I would put Ed Miliband in. And now I don't like what Ed Miliband would do, but the man has an idea. He has an ideology. He has beliefs in what he wants to see and outcomes that he wants to achieve. And to that extent, he has more of a plan than the current incumbent.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale, or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights, limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. It's the final weekend of the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Hurry, offer ends this Monday. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
With a Little Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Little Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Mmm. Little. More to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability. Ends 25th of Feb. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/LPTV.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 10:51, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Here's a nice message. Could James O'Brien please repeat the books, the names of the books he's spoken about this morning, especially the one about early New York growth and just now the latest immigrants books and the reference to George Michael. I couldn't write the names down quickly enough. We should start doing that, shouldn't we, after the show, like a reading list. The only radio show in the world with a reading list. I should start a Substack, but I'd probably make you pay for that. Satnam Sangira's books are called Empire World and Empire Land. They are both masterpieces. His latest book, which isn't out until the summer, is a beautiful tribute to and explanation of George Michael, called Tonight the Music Seems So Loud. And the book that looks at New York meatpacking and the much broader question of how corporatism destroys humanity, effectively, is Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser, who is a guest on an imminent episode of Full Disclosure. There you go. So let's get back to the question of what it is that... So here's an interesting thing about Nadeem Zahawi. What did he describe as hugely discriminatory, demeaning and sad? What did Nadeem Zahawi describe? In fact, let's do it this way around. What did the man who you're about to hear, being interviewed earlier today by Nick Ferrari, what did he describe just a few years ago, less than a decade ago, as hugely discriminatory, demeaning and sad? But before you answer that question, have a proper listen to the sound of a man soiling himself live on national radio.
Do you feel safe in London?
No. I've got to tell you,
and yesterday, for your children.
Yesterday I walked from my home in one of the most
well-heeled,
upmarket, you can call it, areas of London, and an individual walked past me. I literally walked off the pavement into the middle of the road, kept a very close eye at 8 a.m. right?
To see whether... What was this individual? Did he appear to be drunk? Did he appear to be aggressive?
He just looked at, he hadn't slept for... a week, and just looked like somebody that might be violent. I don't know. But I just walked and away from the pavement to walk. And I'm a big guy.
Yes, you are.
And I don't feel safe that my 13-year-old can walk in London. That can't be right.
Sorry, what? Pardon? Don't be tired on the streets of London if Nazim Zahawi's in charge. Don't be tired. And, well, it's a conversation about migration, so you have to presume that this person was brown. And Nazim Zahawi realised in that moment that he couldn't actually say that out loud. Ferrari said, so what was the problem? And he thought, so he's thinking three things. Oh, rats. Nigel's so good at this. Why am I falling apart so quickly when I try and join in? He's thinking, I didn't tell anyone and nothing actually happened, so I can't claim that there's a police involvement because then they'd ask for a crime number and the newspapers would be all over it. And number three, I can't say that I was scared because he's brown, because I'm brown. What the hell am I going to say? I've just told Nick Ferrari I was scared of someone. But I can't say they were brown because I'm brown. I can't say that anything happened because then he'd want to know why I didn't contact the police, be like Susan Hall's purse getting nicked on the London Underground all over again. And I can't explain, oh, wow, what am I going to say now about why I was scared when I wasn't, when I've made up a story completely? How am I going to cover my backside without looking completely ridiculous? I've got a great idea. I'll say he looked tired.
Do you feel safe in London?
No. I've got to tell you.
And for your children?
Yesterday, I walked from my home in one of the most, upmarket, you can call it, areas of London, and an individual walked past me. I literally walked off the pavement into the middle of the road, kept a very close eye at 8 a.m. right, to
what
see
was,
whether
what was this individual? Did he appear to be drunk? Did he appear to be aggressive?
He just looked at, like, he hadn't slept for a week and just looked like somebody that might be violent. I don't know, but I just walked and away from the pavement to walk, and I'm a big guy.
Right? Yes, you are.
And I don't feel safe that my 13-year-old can walk in London. That can't be right.
He looked like he hadn't slept for a week. Do you think it was Peter Mandelson? That was probably, I mean, he'd have recognised him, wouldn't he? Probably. I stole that joke off Tara. I was going to pass it off as my own, but Eleanor told me that I wasn't allowed to, and on reflection, she was right. Nadim Zahawi described Donald Trump's ban on people born in certain Muslim-majority countries from entering the US as hugely discriminatory, demeaning and sad. Do you know why? Yeah, because he was born in Iraq. So they did mean him that day. And Donald Trump's racism was hugely discriminatory, demeaning and sad. But he's somehow persuaded that Jim Ratcliffe doesn't mean him. So Jim Ratcliffe's racism, despite being a brown-skinned man who's frightened of tired people, is okay. In fact, it's to be encouraged. That's the bit that we're unravelling today. Harbinder Pal is in Hounslow. Harbinder Pal, what's going on here?
Good morning, James. Hello. Thanks so much for that clip of Nadim Zahawi. I've started chuckling to myself.
On for the ages. Hang on a minute. Before we continue this conversation, did you sleep last night?
Wonderfully.
Oh, that's all right then. Carry on. I'm not scared of you.
But when you give the anecdote, I thought, oh, mate, just say you saw the, oh, he looked so tired. I'm get my car out. Give him my PIN number. Go on, mate. Have a good day. No. Scare the poor bloke.
He's brown and poor. You have to presume he looked brown, tired and poor.
Give me a PIN number, you bad bloke.
I don't know. Anyway, go on. How do you explain this phenomenon?
Well, whenever I see sort of TLCs like Braverman and Nadim Zahawi, Turkey's Loving Christmas, I think, what is the matter with you? I hark back to those characters from Goodness Gracious Me. You know, remember, there's a very common Indian name, it's Kapoor. Yes. Right, and there's a couple in Goodness Gracious Me who rather call themselves Kapoor, call themselves the Coopers,
yes,
and dressed up as a white middle class couple, members of the golf club. And I thought, the joke was basically, whatever you do, you can't change your colour. You can't change your colour. And these people just realised, Braverman and Zahawi, the other Asian guy back in Reform, I don't know what his name is, they've got to realise that there's, When it, time comes, and, I've applied now for Indian citizenship of rule. No, I'm going to go back. If reform get in, I'm going to sit there on the beach and go, I'm going to sip whiskey and watch the world get hell in a handcart. So I'm okay. I've made my money. I'm all good. But it's just outrageous. These people just don't realise that basically when the time comes, when Farage comes in, Farage is just basically Nick Griffin light. Don't see that. No, he's from the same deck of cards. He's the same person. Why don't they understand what's going on? It's just like
why don't they? I mean, you're supposed to be telling me. Why don't they understand?
Well, I think what they do, they look at exceptions. They probably think, well, look at Trump. Trump's got Cash Patel, and Cash Patel's Indian. He's head of the FBI, and J.D. Vance's wife, she's Asian. So, I mean, Trump clearly likes Asian people, so I think we'll be okay. We're Asian, yes, yeah, we'll be okay. And when Trump's influence...
But it's literally 9 years ago, he banned Trump, to continue with the American parallel, he literally banned Nadeem Zahawi and everybody like him from the entire United States of America. And he doesn't realise, because some people may balk at you comparing Nigel Farage to Nick Griffin. For the record, I don't, not at all. But the comparisons with Trump are actively and enthusiastically invited by Nigel Farage. In fact, we'll double check that he was in favour of the Muslim ban, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And yet Nadeem Zahawi was a victim of it, and now he's hopping into bed with the bloke that thought it was a brilliant idea.
It makes sense. It's insane. Yeah. And I discussed it with my mates, and what they do is they look to the exceptions. Well, look at J.D. Vance's wife. Look at Cash Patel.
I don't mean that. They're all right.
They're just exceptions. Don't you understand that? With Nick Griffin and Nigel Farage, right? Nigel Farage looks like a boy you can have a drink with. In a pub, right? Okay. Nick Griffin is scary. He looks like an SS officer, right? But they're essentially the same people. It's just one is far more marketable than the other.
Well, I mean, I pick you up slightly on the Nick Griffin comparison. partly because SS officers walk around in uniform, and he never did. But he had a... stop it. I'm trying to pick you up on your comparisons, which are not entirely fair. But he had an unfortunate manner on Question Time. He wasn't very clubbable in one sense of the word. Both him and Farage, of course, are eminently clubbable in another sense of the word. But Griffin didn't look like the kind of bloke you'd find having a scotch at your golf club. So his racism, blatant though it was easier to call out than Farage's, which is a very middle class golf club style racism. Thank you, Harbinder Pal. I mean, there's a lot to get through today, but I don't want to move away from this because I feel like I've broken the seal of something really significant. And that quote, of course, from when Trump did the Muslim ban is extraordinary. Nadeem Zahawi, of course, was a huge fan of Boris Johnson, up to and including calling for Boris Johnson to return in an article he wrote for the Daily Telegraph on the morning that Boris Johnson announced that he would not be making any attempt to return because he hadn't got sufficient support, at which point the Daily Telegraph received a frenzied phone call from Nadeem Zahawi insisting that they take down the article immediately because, I don't know whether he actually said like this out loud, it makes me look like an even bigger idiot than usual. But on the Muslim ban to America, of which you absolutely shock me if Farage hadn't been in favour of it, and be even more shocked if he'd spoken out against it, Zahawi was on the hook for that. He was himself, he said, personally banned from entering the US. And that was hugely discriminatory, demeaning and sad, in his own words. And now he's signed up with the British equivalent. Why is the question, not specifically or exclusively about him, but why do ethnic minority people join in with the racism of racists? 0345 6060 973. It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the High Court has ruled the UK's decision to ban Palestine Action as a terror group is unlawful. Judges called it a significant error by the then Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper. The ban will remain in place for now to allow for further legal arguments. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments at the High Court in London.
In handing down their judgment, they said the prescription of Palestine Action is disproportionate. A very small number of the group's activities may amount to acts of terrorism, but they said the general criminal law applies for the rest of their activities. They said their actions had not yet reached the scale and the level for prescription.
The Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood says she's disappointed and has promised to appeal the judgment.
The former Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has told LBC that Sir Jim Ratcliffe was right to make controversial comments about immigration. The co-owner of Manchester United has apologised after claiming the UK has been colonised by immigrants. Sir Jim has faced widespread criticism from across the political spectrum for the comments. Mr Zahawi, who recently defected from the Tories to Reform UK, rejected claims that agreeing with the remarks make him racist.
It's quite the opposite. I want, actually, a healthy society where we celebrate immigration. We bring the best and the brightest from the world. In fact, they're going the other way. What we've got at the moment is low-skilled migration in the millions, right? That's probably... by the way, it's unsustainable. We will go bankrupt.
You can read and see more of Nadeem Zahawi's exclusive interview on the LBC app. A top lawyer for the investment bank Goldman Sachs is to leave the firm after her close ties with Jeffrey Epstein were revealed. Emails suggest Kathy Ruemmler maintained a personal relationship with the late sex offender after his conviction in 2008. She told a newspaper that media attention was a distraction. She previously said that she dealt with Epstein as a defence attorney and wasn't aware of any ongoing criminal conduct. And the US Secretary of State told European leaders to re-examine their role in the new era of geopolitics. Marco Rubio is attending the Munich Security Summit today, where he's expected to tell NATO allies the continent must learn to defend itself. The future of Greenland and Ukraine are also expected to be discussed. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 15 at £10,418. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK, some brighter spells but also heavy showers for southern England, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11. Low-skilled migration in the millions, says Nadeem Zahawi, demonstrating a grasp of the figures that is up there with Sir Jim Ratcliffe's figure, which yesterday was out by a mere 350%. Net migration down to 204,000 in the year to June 2025. And, of course, the need for workers, low-skilled or otherwise, massively exacerbated by the Brexit that was supported by Ratcliffe and, I presume, by Zahawi, who was massively and passionately opposed to Donald Trump's Muslim ban because it affected him. Funny that, isn't it? And Nigel Farage, inevitably, Nadeem Zahawi's new boss, was a big fan, well, remains a huge fan of every single thing that Donald Trump has ever done, up to and including grabbing women by their private parts, which he didn't do because that was just locker room talk. It's just so... what's the word I'm looking for? Because it's oddly not dispiriting. Maybe if I didn't have this job, I'd feel differently about it. But once you start explaining it in simple terms, let's have a look at what an objection would look like. I'm not getting many at the moment, which is a shame. You know, figures are up 80,000 in the last quarter, but none of them apparently racists, because I'm not getting the text that I used to get. Let me see if I can find one. Here's Alan. You can twist it all you like. It's about too many people living off the taxes of British people, says Alan in response to the racist comments of a man who paid no income tax last year, while immigrants paid £17 billion. Although culture does if they live here and want to import their culture over ours, writes Alan, who's illiterate. You cannot twist other words to suit your narrative. So this is what happens. Nadeem Zahawi tries to defend it and ends up explaining that he's frightened of people who've just finished night shifts. Alan tries to defend it and claims that it's all about taxes. That's why he supports the bloke who doesn't pay any. What would you do now? So, I think you'll find his employees pay tax. Oh, that's all right then. Yeah, that's okay. God, how bent would you have to be to even inflate that argument? I haven't got any others. This is I don't want to say it's depressing necessarily, but you can't defend it. If you defend it, you sound like Nadeem Zahawi, and you haven't even heard the bit where he talks about the army. I'll play that to you shortly. When are you going to... Do you know how much it costs to bring the army in? Do you know how much it costs the council if you want to bring the army in to empty the bins? A, it insults every soldier, of course. There's nothing wrong with emptying bins, but if you wanted to do that, you'd become a bin man. You wouldn't become a soldier. And B, it costs councils, I think, and you can check this if you want, £4,000 a week per soldier, per council. So you bring soldiers in to do a job, as Nadeem Zahawi seems to think they should be rounding. He wants to bring in soldiers to round up all the tired people walking home after night shifts. £4,000 it would cost. Anyway, have a listen to the wombat talking earlier.
Do you feel safe in London?
No. I've got to tell you. And yesterday,
the army bit. Have we got the army bit? Oh, OK. We'll play the army bit in a minute. Let's get back to the phones. Bella is in Camden. Bella, what would you like to say?
Well, back to commenting what you said about why black and brown people are more likely to kind of align themselves with the right-wing politics or almost to advocate more for those views. I think what we're really looking at is kind of assimilation politics, where one wants to be, one is so desperate to be part of a society that they align themselves with the more extreme and more racist and prejudiced views, so they're more easily integrated and considered to be part of the community.
I mean, at risk of sounding ungrateful, isn't that the obvious bit?
It is the obvious part. I think from the political side, from the party side, what they've got is this kind of diverse rainbow and panel of politicians, and they're able to kind of declare, how could we be racist, you know, if we've got all these black and brown faces at the front line of our party? And then from the individual perspective, where we no longer think of ourselves as kind of a community not listing ourselves all together, they then get the kind of entry card or the pass into the group that considers themselves to be British. So then they're part of a society that they've so desperately wanted to be a part of.
And they, you know, the I suppose the more full-throated we are in our support of racist rhetoric, as Zahawi was reduced to doing on the radio today, the more they think that their own ethnicity won't matter to the racists that they're cozying up to.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm British Caribbean third gen, and when people came over, it was kind of about how quickly you could shed your origin identity. So really, if we're looking at things like speaking patois in the Caribbean and then arriving here, it was kind of how quickly can you get rid of your accent? How quickly can you assimilate the Queen's English? And you kind of get more kind of cruel and extreme as your desire to be part of the assimilated culture becomes more desperate. So what you almost get is people who are black and brown being even more extreme in their rhetoric than perhaps the average white British person would need to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, Zahawi, I almost resent Nick for bringing him back into our thinking, but he was a high-profile signing to Reform, of course, and whether or not you think interviews with him aid or hinder attempts at rehabilitation is, I suppose, in the ear of the beholder. But Nigel Farage welcomed Donald Trump's ban on Nadeem Zahawi being able to visit the United States of America. He literally welcomed it, despite not being able to name a single terror attack committed by a refugee. I remember these reports from 2017, but I wanted to double-check before I stated it completely. He has welcomed it. He's entitled to do this. He was voted in on this ticket and asked if he agreed with it. He said, well, I do. Because I think if you look at what is happening in France and Germany after Mrs. Merkel's policy on this, which was to let everybody in from virtually anywhere, look what it's led to. So does Zahawi not realise that? Or does he think he'd get a free pass or an exemption? Or he's working for a man, he's bigging up a man, he's bending the knee for a man who thinks it was right for him to be banned from visiting his own son in the United States of America in the first term of Donald Trump's presidency.
I think you've got to kind of unpack the cultural brainwashing that goes on here. And it's not to say that he's not an intelligent man and can't think for himself.
Well, we're back to someone saying now, we'll say, well, he made a lot of money. He must be intelligent. But I think Jim Ratcliffe proved yesterday that they don't necessarily follow on from each other.
No, and there's a lot of propaganda that goes on here alongside that has someone believing and propagating these views. And as I said before, it's individualistic in nature. So you're right, although there might be this general ban, you kind of hope for yourself that you're not included in that. Or if you advocate for that, there's a kind of greasy pipeline of where you could kind of get out of that or separate yourself. So you align yourself with what seems to be popular or what will seem to be accepted and kind of consider yourself exempt from that, because at the end of the day, you want to assimilate into the culture. So you see yourself as American or British, and you kind of hope that everyone else will see you in that way because you've aligned yourself with the popular thought.
And are we being a bit, are we overlooking blatant self-interest? I mean, because in the case of Braverman and Zahawi, Zahawi reportedly begging Kemi Badenoch for a peerage right up until the moment he defected to Reform. Is it simply that they think that their own political survival or their own...
Absolutely. It's all based upon...
How can you close your eyes so tightly to that? How can Zahawi now be making sweet music with the man that approved of him being banned from visiting his own son in America because of his ethnicity, because of his country of origin? Base racism applauded by Nigel Farage, for whom Nadeem Zahawi is now bending the knee. What is going... I mean, is that just ambition, self-regard, hunger for status, overarching so
it's
completely...
All of them. It's absolutely all of them. I think we still kind of think in the collective and think about what will push a community forward and assume that people are thinking that way as well. And they're fundamentally not. This is now in society, today's society, self-interest and, as you said before, ambition. It's kind of about what I can do to further myself. And these are the sorts of moves and the sorts of plays. And I think the more looked down on you are as a member of society, and we're talking about darker of skin, that means you've got to almost vie even harder for it. You can easily take an example of biracial people in the UK. They don't have to, for example, advocate or push as hard to be considered part of British society because they are of mixed heritage. So what you'll often find themselves is they'll be a little bit more impartial on these sorts of topics because they've already got their cultural identity approved by British society. It's those who have to almost fight harder to be considered part of Britain who come out with these more extreme views on either side.
Yeah. Why do you think Zahawi was at great pains to mention that he was in a posh part of town?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that's just being included in the club. It's kind of a proof of being in the ether of
the road to avoid a tired person. I'm fascinated to know what was really going on there, although I suspect that my own analysis of the comments is pretty close to bang on the money. But how he squares the Muslim ban on him that Nigel Farage applauded with his support for Nigel Farage perhaps it's a question for the ages. I don't know. Maybe we've underestimated the self-interest angle. I don't remember what it is like to have... You notice my very careful choice of words there. I don't remember what it is like to have overarching and overweening ambition, to be obsessed with status and material success. But at what point does Zahawi think he's done enough? What is he seeking? Is it just a seat in the House of Lords? And I'll throw every brown-skinned person in the country, including my own family, by the way, because the bloke I now work for wants us to be banned from the United States of America, where my son lives. Is it just that? Is it just... What does Braverman get out of it? It just gets her face back in the papers? Does she think it increases her chances of doing my holiday cover again next time I go away? I don't know. I'd have to check. Does it? Does it increase our chances of doing my holiday cover again next time I go on holiday? I'll find out after this.
LBC. Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes. Through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment, Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
Everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling.
Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right.
Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and two sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats. And get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 18 minutes after 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I continue this quest. I don't know. What are the answers that we've got? I guess it's going to be different, is it, for every potential victim of Nigel Farage's racism joining Nigel Farage's political party? I don't know. Ambition clouds out everything else, probably, in the case of Suella Braverman and Nadeem Zahawi. I don't know. But what else is going on here? A belief that you'll be spared the bile and the vitriol if you are part of the party that brings it back into the mainstream, kicking and screaming. A class thing. It's fascinating that Zahawi wanted to stress to Nick earlier that he was in a posh part of town. He's a big fella, you know, Nadeem. Oh, he's a big, big boy. He's a big, big boy, Nadeem Zahawi. But he's frightened of tired people in posh parts of town. He obviously wanted to say something else and realised that he couldn't because he's not as good at the race baiting as Nigel Farage is. So Nigel Farage can say, oh, they were all talking foreign on a train. And immediately, in the eyes of his fellow racists, in the mind's eye of his fellow racists, everybody's brown, right? Because, of course, if you point out to Nigel Farage that his own children speak foreign to their foreign mum at home, he'd say, well, that's not the same thing at all. I don't imagine they do it on a train. So he's much better at it than Zahawi. Zahawi was trying to do a little bit of race baiting. That, well, I was in a very posh part of town and a man came towards me who did absolutely nothing except look very tired. But the problem, of course, was that he looked a bit sugar. I can't say Muslim. Because I was against the Muslim ban, or at least the ban on people born in Muslim-majority countries. That was so unfair, you realise, when you dig into it, because Nadeem Zahawi's not a Muslim. If it had provided exceptions to Christians born in Iraq, it would have been absolutely fine with it. Despite that being about the least Christian thing it would be possible to do in the context of loving your neighbour. So I can't say he looked a bit Muslim, because that's a stupid thing to say. A lot of people think I look a bit Muslim. I'm inside Nadeem Zahawi's mind now. I'm not speaking as James. I can't say that he looked like a migrant, or I can't say he looked foreign. I can't say he was brown. Oh, let's listen to it again. And then I want to expand the question into what happens in your life. So if I say to you, I've spoken to people who are part of this phenomenon, who do you think of first? If I give you a clue, the first syllable of the name I'm thinking of is the same first syllable as the word phenomenon. Who are you thinking of? Let's see how many people get it right. How many people think of the same character that I think of from the sort of post-Brexit heyday? Well, it wasn't the heyday of this programme because we just posted extraordinary figures. But the period when the show moved from being just another radio programme to being the kind of show that was getting profiled in the New York Times. Do you remember the caller who sums up exactly what it is that we're talking about? If you do, text it to 84850 or WhatsApp it to 0345 6060973. Here is Nadeem Zahawi proving how good Nigel Farage is at racist provocation, because it's not as easy as Farage makes it look, especially not for a brown-skinned man.
Do you feel safe in London?
No. I've got to tell you.
And for your children?
Yesterday, I walked from my home in one of the most... upmarket, you can call it, areas of London, and an individual walked past me. I literally walked off the pavement into the middle of the road, kept a very close eye at 8 a.m. right, to
what
see
was,
whether
what was this individual? Did he appear to be drunk? Did he appear to be aggressive?
He just looked at, he hadn't slept for a week, and just looked like somebody that might be violent. I don't know, but I just walked and away from the pavement to walk, and I'm a big guy, right?
Yes, you are.
And I don't feel safe that my 13-year-old can walk in London. That can't be right.
Am I the only one when he said, I'm a big guy? And Nick said, yes, you are. I thought of that Eddie Murphy film. I go, Hercules, 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 you're such a big guy. Why are you scared of tired people? I don't know. I tell you what did occur to me. If only he hadn't had to pay nearly 5 million quid to the Inland Revenue in a fine, he'd have been able to live somewhere even more well-heeled. And the likelihood of bumping into a poor, tired person would have been even lower. Unless, of course, there was something else going on there that he suddenly realised in the moment he wasn't actually able to say out loud. I wonder why. Extending it now into your world. So, people in your life, your family, who do this, who think that they will somehow... I mean, I think of Al yesterday, who rang us from Sheffield, but who grew up in Willenhall, not far from where I grew up, because he had that accent that makes me homesick. And his sister being married to a man, I forget the precise details, who was, I think, half Polish, and who is buying the racist claptrap of Nigel Farage. And it means that he hasn't been able to see his sister, because he's a British Pakistani. And he knows that when Ratcliffe says what he says, when Farage says what he knows that they mean brown people. They don't care. Integration is such a stupid word. Not a stupid word, but it's such a bogus word. And how do I know that? Well, because if you really want these people to integrate, then you love Sadiq Khan, right? Because no one is as integrated as a man who's been elected mayor of our capital city three times on the run, but comes from a British Pakistani background. Well, what's that? You say you hate Sadiq Khan. That's very strange. Because you love integration. You hate people that want to live only among people that look and act like them. Oh, no, hang on, sorry. You are somebody that wants to live only among people that look and act like you, but you hate anybody else who wants to live only among people who look and act like them if they don't look and act like you. Have I got that right? But anyway, what happens in your family? Philip in Sandbach. Did anybody get it right? I can't. My inbox is moving too quickly this morning. Do you remember Philip in Sandbach? Was he even a UKIP councillor? A South Asian background, and couldn't help himself. Every time he came on the radio, he'd start making hideous comments about ethnic minorities. And you sort of think, what is it that you think the people who introduce this bile and poison to the mainstream think about you? What do they think about you? But tell me what happens in your own family, if you would, or in your friendship circle, about your personal experience of people doing a Zahawi. Cozying up to racists and somehow not caring enough or not believing that their racism would ever extend to you. I wonder if that gives you a better insight into why and how it happens. 03456060973. It's also close to treachery, of course, to tell lies about the safety of London. And there's an awful lot of it going on at the moment. 11:25 is the time. Mo's in Harrow. Mo, what would you like to say?
Yeah, James, I so hope you're not right about Suella Braverman.
What do you mean?
Aiming to cover your post.
I couldn't get hold of the relevant member of management to find out whether her chances of doing my holiday cover are increased or decreased by joining Nigel Farage's racist party.
Yeah, please do everything possible for that not to happen. But anyway, on your main question, I think it's extreme selfishness. These people, whether it's Suella or Nadim, so they are extremely selfish for personal success, ambition. And you've covered a number of points. But I mean, I don't know.
And it trumps everything else. It trumps all of the, and you throw in a little bit of wealth or class, and they think, and that's why Zahawi stressed that this was in a rich part of town, where he thinks, in some ways, I suppose Trump gives him some sucker for this belief that if you are rich enough and sycophantic enough, then you'll be given a free pass on all the racism.
Absolutely.
And in return, he gets a seat in the House of Lords.
Yeah, he wants to be Prime Minister. I mean, that guy, his ambition is to be the Prime Minister of the country. There was no way he was going to do it with the Conservatives. So he thinks, right, reform are doing pretty well now. Let's make a switch, but that's my ultimate aim. But whatever it is, they're just striving to, they're so personally ambitious. They want to get to the top or whatever they can get to. They want to earn and, you know, be, you know, have the most money possible.
Yeah, but you know what the problem with this is?
Anything.
Do you know what the problem with this is?
What's the problem, James?
The problem, Mo, is...
For people like me, it's a problem because, you know...
Well, I know, well, let me just check. Have you ever phoned the police because a tired man walked past you?
No.
Okay. Well, that's because you're such a snowflake. It was probably because you're such a big guy. You're a big guy, Mo. You're a big guy. Hercules! Hercules! The problem with this is that if that was it, then so psychologically it has to be more complicated than that, because if that was the reason, if I was joining an organisation that was racist about Irish people, people of Irish heritage, I wouldn't become anti-Irish. I wouldn't be louder in my hatred of Irish people than some non-Irish people in my party. I'd kind of keep my head down during those bits. And yet Zahawi didn't end up on the radio by accident this morning. He wanted to be out there stapling himself to Jim Ratcliffe's racism. So it's not enough to say it's self-interest. That what explains the desire to staple yourself to the racism of a Farage or a Ratcliffe? Because I can just about get my head around being so ambitious and so greedy for and also, sadly, so broken that I think happiness will somehow be born of external baubles rather than internal care. But I wouldn't join in. I'd just sort of look the other way when it happened. I wouldn't embrace it wholeheartedly like Zahawi and Braverman and also the woman running for mayor of London, who's always going on about how unsafe London is without any evidence to back it up whatsoever. What explains that? I think she's a Muslim as well. What explains that? That not just the ambition and the self-regard, but the doubling down on the racism of their colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, these people are very complicated anyway.
They are, aren't they?
But I mean, you know, what's the driver? You know, one of the main drivers is that personal ambition and selfishness. Beyond, as I said, it's...
Beyond everything else.
Selfishness. It's narcissistic. They just want to find a way to get to the top. And, you know, if they'll dump anybody, as you say, family, their own ethnic groups, whatever, they don't care because they're just... They're just trying to find out.
You say it's complicated, and then you offer up an analysis that's unerringly simple. Although, of course, if it were that simple, we wouldn't be having such an engaging phone-in about it. Have you? And you were on the line before I asked that question. But is it something you've encountered in your personal life at all?
Not so much. I mean, I'm from a South Asian background. I came here when I was six. So I went to school, you know, here right from the beginning, did my A-levels, went to uni, got a great job, had a great career. And most of my family, I think, fortunately, are reasonably well-grounded. I mean, you do see some friends. You know, one of your callers earlier mentioned about the Kapoors and the Coopers.
Yeah.
So you do bump into... the odd family or friend who you think, oh, if their name was Kapoor, they'd be acting like the Cooper.
That's an empire legacy as well, of course. It's not just about 21st century racism. It's about what we did when we arrived, what the British Empire did when it arrived in countries where the residents had darker skin than we have, is that they made paler skin a desirable. And you still see the legacy of that in the Caribbean and in South Asia as well, in the South Asian diaspora. Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
Palestine Action has won a high court challenge over the government's decision to declare it a banned terror group. Judges say the prescription is disproportionate, although the ban will remain in place while the Home Office appeals. The former Chancellor Nadim Zahawi has told LBC that Sir Jim Ratcliffe was right to make controversial comments about immigration. The co-owner of Manchester United apologised yesterday after claiming the UK has been colonised by immigrants. And the US Secretary of State has told European leaders to re-examine their role in the new era of geopolitics. Marco Rubio is heading to the Munich Security Summit, where he's expected to tell NATO allies that the continent must learn to defend itself. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK, bright spells and heavy showers for the south of England, cold and dry elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
With LV, I can get my home insurance from just £133. They've made it easy for me to get a great price. And their 24/7 emergency helpline lets me look after what matters to me. Because insurance is simple when it's me and LV.
No wonder we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. Get your quote today at lv.com. 10% of new customers paid £133 or less July to December 2025. LV General Insurance is part of Allianz.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:34 is the time. I'm going to hit this mark again because it really helps me make sense of things. And it was Mike, wasn't it, in Greenwich, who had spent many, many years in the US diplomatic corps, explaining Trump to us and almost all far-right politics. And there's a third element of it that doesn't immediately jump into your mind. So there's racism and misogyny, which often go hand in hand. In fact, quite a lot of the conversations that we're having about members of ethnic minorities stapling themselves to the racism of Jim Ratcliffe or Nigel Farage is reminiscent of conversations we have about women upholding the patriarchy. Which we've had earlier this week, haven't we? When you have, you come to a better understanding when we're talking about Epstein, about why some women facilitate that behaviour. Tom Swarbrick had an extraordinary guest on his programme who claimed that if you weren't in the Epstein files, you were a loser. And listen, I mean, the natural impulse to somebody like that is sort of a mixture of shock and horror, but there's room for quite a lot of, I mean, how broken would you have to be by society to be proud of the fact that you were appearing in a paedophile's private papers, or not even that, because there are plenty of people who were in them who had done nothing wrong. It's a bit like a contacts book, but to be claiming that it's a mark of honour or a mark of success to be in it, while also, you know, glossing over the fact that a person you'd stepped out with was up to his ears in Epstein associations, and many of the allegations being levelled at Andrew Windsor remain live, as it were, if not all of them, in fact, despite his repeated denials. I see crossover there. So misogyny and racism hand in hand, but climate change, that denial, that's the other bit of the equation. I fully understand why, except that that's how you make the money. So you get the racism and misogyny front and centre to turn the population into something that is divided and obsessed and fighting battles that are meaningless in the great scheme of things, but distracts the population enough for people to make enormous money out of exploitation and discrimination. And the best example of that is climate change. And today, or yesterday, Donald Trump announces that coal isn't actually a pollutant, effectively. Coal. I don't know if you, the last time you came into contact with some coal, you now have to call it beautiful, clean coal. You know I love George Orwell, right? But I admit to you that when I cited Orwell in the aftermath of Brexit, which provided a wonderful example of what happens when you let go of reality and start ignoring observable truths, I had no inkling how much more relevant Orwell would become in the coming years. I thought we were kind of peaking. I remember that line I used to hit you over the head with all the time. There was truth and there was untruth. And if you clung on to truth, even against the whole world, you were not mad. I still love that line. Donald Trump is now saying that coal is clean. Coal is beautiful and clean. Because the amount of money that can be made from belching noxious fumes into the atmosphere remains huge. Do you know what country actually saw its carbon emissions go down last year? Go on, take a wild guess. On the day that Donald Trump announced they were going to start burning coal again like it was going out of fashion and lied through his teeth that it was clean, do you know which country saw its carbon emissions go down? Its greenhouse gas emissions, in fact, go down. Go and have a guess. China. So it's funny, isn't it, when you listen to other phone-in programs, people who are always there to expose their racism or their misogyny also like to say, well, there's no point tackling climate change because of China. China's going down. America is about to go up at a rate of knots. And that is the problem, because when you embrace bigotry, you by nature become a liar. As Nadeem Zahawi discovered this morning, embraced bigotry, started telling a story, realized he couldn't finish it. So ends up claiming that he was on the verge of calling the police because a tired man walked past him. And it got arguably worse a moment later when he turned his attention to what we might do about the streets of Mayfair or Knightsbridge or Chelsea or wherever it is. And remember, violin time, if Nadeem Zahawi hadn't had to pay £5 million to the Inland Revenue, he would have been able to afford to live somewhere even more well-heeled, and the likelihood of bumping into a tired person and feeling terrified would have been even lower. But what are we going to do about all the tired people populating our streets?
You know, we have to basically send a very clear message to every police force that if you need additional help, you know, the weasel words from the West Midland Police Force was only because they took the soft option. It's the same with the rape gangs, right? The reason they never dealt with it at the time, because it's too difficult, because, oh, we might be labelled racist. That's why they didn't actually take those poor girls seriously. It's awful. But and it happens all the time. Do you remember that poor cinema manager who was showing a film, yes, that offended, you know, a group of people, who then went and was supposed to be coming to talk to him, but of course all had their faces covered were very aggressive. They took the film off. Why? Right?
No,
that was during our administration, right? I would have done the opposite. I would have said, if I were, you know, and I regret not doing this stuff, if I were Home Secretary, I'd be calling the Chief of Police saying, listen, if you need help, we'll send the army in.
I can't remember who it was. I'm sure I had a colleague who was adamant that Jerry Springer the Opera shouldn't be shown on UK television because it was offensive towards Jesus by suggesting that he might be a little bit gay. I can't remember who it was. But anyway, I don't remember the film that Zahawi is referring to there, but he wants to get the army in, which when ministers toyed with the idea of bringing in the army to cover for striking ambulance staff in 2022, it was estimated that the bill would be £10 million. That's a bill that taxpayers would have to pick up. If you want to bring in the army to do something in this country, it costs the local council £4,000 per soldier per week. £4,000 per soldier per week. So you're calling for other taxpayers to pay that while you're on the hook for £5 million to the Inland Revenue for trying to avoid paying your own share. Oh, and you're on the radio today to staple yourself to the racism of a bloke who doesn't pay any personal income tax at all because he became an immigrant to avoid it, while £17 billion is paid by immigrants in the UK. Ah, me neither. Sonny's in Milton Keynes. Sonny, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. We've spoken before, but the thing about the what makes someone go against your upbringing or the community you came from, that really struck a chord, because we've spoken before. I'm a Ugandan Asian, yeah. Grew up here, 70s, 80s, ran the whole gauntlet, and made it through to the other side. But I would argue that the last caller said it was just naked greed and ambition. I would go further and say that it's coming from a deep lack of self-worth. And I'll give an example from a family member. I'll keep it very general. But I have a family member born in the 80s in UK, same background as me, descendants of Ugandan Asians, state educated, a single mother, council housing, he had his milk, you know, the sure start. He had all the things that we think are good for society. But
I don't think he did have his milk. I think Margaret Thatcher had taken that away in the 70s, but I'm being a pain in the butt.
So he had sure start.
Sure start, definitely.
But very bright, and I had a hand in sort of moulding him in the young years, but then I had to go away to work overseas. But sure. Long story short, he's an Oxford-educated person in UK. Very, very prestigious, high-profile sure. job. And when things were kicking off with Brexit, and we have WhatsApp family chats, and I could see that he was, sort of slipping away. So he was showing all his conversations and attitudes were kind of pulling up the drawbridge, right? Mm-hmm. I'm actually quite sympathetic to some arguments from Reform. And so it went on and on. Then I realized, wow, you know, what happened to you? What happened? So what I'm arguing is that somewhere along the way, we've all grown up here. We've all had experiences that molded us. There's something in the past that has created this deep lack of self-worth, I would say, for all of them. Suella, Braverman, Sajid, all of these people who came here as immigrants, but they're now sort of arguing that the next generation can't come, shouldn't have come, that kind of thing. So it's something in the past. It's something that has created this lack of shame about where you come from, and you want to disown, you want to play that down, you want to show that no, I'm whiter than white, or I'm more than.
I'm going to ask you a question, and you feel free to shoot me down in metaphorical flames. But when I started doing this job, I stumbled into something I'd never really come across before, and it was thrown into sharper relief by later experiences. But sometimes, and you get it a lot with sort of evangelists and pastors in the United States of America, sometimes the most committed homophobes are actually running away from their own sexuality, and they've been raised in a society where their own natural feelings have been demonized and denigrated to such a degree that they spend their entire lives trying to prove how much they hate those feelings that they actually have themselves. Are we talking about something similar to that? A bit like women upholding the patriarchy, when you talk about something that's happened.
It's called internalized cultural inferiority. So there's some things have happened. Yeah, things have happened to me that will stay with me forever. But no. They haven't changed me. They haven't changed who I am. It's something that I look back on and say, okay, that's made me stronger. But the other way to go is you internalize it, and then you say, right, I can't see myself as this. So I'm going to now become something else, and that's what I think happened to my family member. I've seen it a lot in friendship circles where you go all out to deny where you came from.
Yeah.
I'm guilty. When I was young, I would make my parents drop me off a few streets away from school because I was it was only me and my sister,
right,
the only brown kids in school. So I've been through it. I didn't want to eat Indian food. I went through all of that, but I came through it. But some people don't, James. That's my point. And that fuels this whole thing about, I mean, I can't imagine what my family member went through at Cambridge, but he was surrounded by a whole different class of and a whole different ball game, James. I can't imagine what he went through.
No, I can probably imagine it better than you can, but again, as a white person, I wouldn't really know, but it's a sort of desperation to belong. And that means that the lure of, I mean, he does belong, of course, but he wants to belong to a tribe rather than a country.
It. Yeah, exactly. So that's where I...
And that's what they mean by integration.
Yeah.
So you have to acknowledge that we're better And you have to want to pretend that you're like us, and then we'll accept you.
Exactly.
But there's that implicit acknowledgement of white supremacy.
Exactly. And I love your...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and I love your Orwell references, because Orwell served in India in the civil service as a policeman in Burma.
Did, yeah.
And he said that the British imperialism was based on a hollow tyranny, and it's this bogus hierarchy that my family member has brought in. You know, it's a hollow. Yeah, if you don't have the right sort of correctors in as you grow up, then you can fall into this and see, I'm not enough, I need to be someone else.
And that is the explicit or the implicit message that you get, is that we'll pretend that you fit in if you put in the hard yards in distancing yourself, in your case, from family members who look like you. Oh, it's heartbreaking, but it is there, isn't it? You have to be quietly acknowledging the white supremacism of people like Donald Trump, I suppose, or Nigel Farage. Or actually, there was an extraordinary moment in Congress yesterday when the white nationalist that Donald Trump wants to appoint to a top post at the State Department was asked about his claims that there was some sort of erasure of white culture underway. It's actually worth listening to that, because it ties in quite perfectly with what Sonny has been talking about. 11:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Simon Marks, speaking of Matters American, is up next.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Would you ever take out a loan where the lender can change the terms whenever it likes? The interest keeps rising even when your wages don't. You can't refinance it. You can't escape it.
I think the expansion in higher education has been a good thing for the country.
Over 150,000 students now have a debt of over £100,000. They're calling it a debt sentence. They'll never be able to repay it, and yet we call it a loan.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
We treated pensions like this. We repackaged it, changed the terms whenever the government wants. At a whim, we wouldn't hear the end of it. You'd never do it. It's just because these young people don't vote in those numbers. It's political cowardice.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This Valentine's Day at Lidl, it's easy to get it right. With our range of fresh flowers from £3.99, like a dozen radiant red roses, or Belgian seashell chocolate, just £3.19 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus, subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Offer ends 18th of February. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
Everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away. You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £45 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Whoa. Oh, should have stretched first. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
With the Lidl Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Lidl Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Lidl, more to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability. Ends 25th of Feb, 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Fly into flip-flop mode. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:52 is the time. Hi, James, writes Derek. I think it's a good idea to have the opposite of Idiot's Corner for callers like Sonny a moment ago. He spoke so much sense. Well, almost all of our callers would end up in whatever the opposite of Idiot's Corner would be. Genius Avenue? I don't know. But I take your point, and I am always, as you know, enormously grateful to people for illuminating and educating me, including occasionally colleagues. But nothing occasionally about Simon Marks's contributions to this programme. They are always illuminating. The only problem we have is knowing where to start. But let's start today in Minnesota, where of course people have been killed for absolutely no reason. And it looked for a while as if that might prompt a terrible escalation of this kind of conduct. What's happening, Simon?
Well, a climb down, James, and we saw yesterday the president's border czar, Tom Homan, who, of course, has been sent to Minnesota to handle the growing uproar and fury over the brutality meted out to people on the streets of Minneapolis-St. Paul by the president's own Border Patrol and ICE agents. Mr. Homan announced yesterday an end to Operation Metro Surge, the catastrophic, I think it is fair to say now, paramilitary operation authorized by the president and, of course, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, that saw the killing of two American citizens in January, Renee Good and Alex Pretty, needlessly shot to death on the streets of Minneapolis, in the case of Renee Good by border by ICE agents, in the case of Alex Pretty by Border Patrol agents. That gave rise to fury on the streets of Minneapolis-St. Paul, tens of thousands of protesters taking to the streets, urging the federal government to row back. Donald Trump probably could have withstood the pressure from protesters in Minneapolis, but if you look at the broader polling, he could not have withstood the slide that in popularity for his implementation of his mass deportation policies, that those two slayings in particular of American citizens who were doing nothing wrong, certainly nothing illegal at the times of their deaths, and certainly were not, as various US government officials have characterized them, domestic terrorists. We've seen in polling 60% of American voters saying that they disapprove of the manner in which the mass deportations policy has been implemented. And so Donald Trump has rowed back, engaged in this U-turn. They tried to suggest to core supporters of the president that they're still absolutely committed to all of this. The ICE and Border Patrol agents, Mr. Homan suggested yesterday, are simply going to be sent to other jurisdictions. But you can definitely see weakness in the president's current position, not just over the brutality that we've seen in Minneapolis, but more broadly. This has been a week in which a White House that never likes to evince any sign of vulnerability or weakness has suffered a number of pretty significant reverses.
It's hard to know what else he can do if this isn't going to work. Even if he were to launch military action against Iran, a brilliant American journalist was explaining to me yesterday that the average American isn't going to give him any breaks on that. And the average American isn't going to change their view of whether or not he's doing a good job if he decides to go in and kill a few or kill a lot of Iranians, whether they're members of the regime or not. Is he running out of road, or is that too optimistic an analysis?
I think he's had a very bad week. I think there's no question that this has been the first week, really, since his return to power in January of last year, where you've started looking and saying, you know, is the bloom going off the rose here? Is the old Kabuki Act finally running out of road with his core supporters? I mean, this has been a week where we've seen key influences with Donald Trump's own MAGA movement calling for the resignation or firing of Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, after her appalling, disdainful, contemptuous appearance on Capitol Hill. Not just contemptuous to the entire concept of checks and balances that lie at the heart of the requirement of members of Congress to hold cabinet members accountable for what they have been doing in office, but contempt, of course, that was demonstrated to the survivors and victims of Jeffrey Epstein, that extraordinary moment where Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State challenged Pam Bondi to turn around and apologize to Epstein victims for her failure to give them any opportunity to talk to her or other officials within her Department of Justice. And she not only refused, but, you know, throughout that hearing, engaged in sophomoric conduct in an effort to kind of just push back at the notion that she should in any way be accountable. We've seen a piece in the Wall Street Journal today, devastating piece, about the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, and her associate at the top of the Department of Homeland Security, longtime Trump aide Corey Lewandowski, that I think is only going to fuel anxiety within the MAGA movement about how long they can remain in post. We've seen Trump's pliant U.S. attorney here in Washington, D.C., Jeanine Pirro, former Fox News star, unable to secure an indictment against six Democrat lawmakers that the president wanted to accuse of sedition because they had made a video warning members of the armed forces not to accept orders that are unlawful. For that, they wanted to pursue sedition charges against them. So, you know, there's definitely been indications this week in a whole raft of other areas as well that the old three-card trick might not be winning for the House at the moment. But does military action against Iran or some other distraction give him the opportunity to change the storyline and try and reverse the sliding numbers? He's always done it before, and you can't rule it out.
No, you can't. And the other thing that you can't rule out is that the Republicans, we could talk, of course, about Democrats failing to find either leadership or purpose, but I'm fascinated by whether or not the latest examples of complete contempt for everything from the Constitution down, demonstrated most recently by Noem and Bondi. But it's like a kind of, there's a quintet, isn't there, of is Noem, Bondi, Hegseth, Miller and Kennedy all sort of come from a similar place of hideousness, really, not to put too fine a point on it, but crucially contempt for the Constitution. Naively, and I think you're in this category as well, not that long ago I would have expected Republicans to be up in arms, and that's not happening still.
Yeah, I think hideousness is exactly the right word. I was thinking before we went on air, what's the right descriptive? Are they ghastly, hideous? What do you use? I mean, it is a hideous grouping. But the problem he's got is that the minute any of these people leaves the inner circle, the whole house of cards can fall apart. If you're going to get rid of Pam Bondi, you've got to get rid of Kristi Noem. If you're going to get rid of Kristi Noem, you've got to deal with issues like Stephen Miller's extraordinary sway over the President of the United States in his position as Deputy White House Chief of Staff and chief ideologue behind the entire operation. You know, there were all sorts of rumors in December that there was going to be a big cabinet reshuffle in January, and it hasn't come. And I think it hasn't come because he knows that the minute you start tinkering with one piece, chinks in the armor are going to leave him himself very exposed. So he continues surrounding himself with these ghastly figures who overcompensate. I mean, Pam Bondi was overcompensating. Yeah. Kristi Noem in this Wall Street Journal expose, all trying to give him what they think he wants. And in the case of Ms. Noem, she's discovered that what he didn't want was American citizens being shot in cold blood on the streets of Minneapolis.
Well, I mean, until he did, or whatever the opposite of that is. If he thought that it was going to play well.
He did until he didn't.
I'm writing Tom Twisters now. Thank you, Simon. That's great stuff. Have a lovely weekend, won't you? I'm sure that you're going to be working harder than I am over the next couple of days, but we're very grateful for your time as always, and the time here in London is 12:01. He's done it twice now. There's an article in the newspaper today, which I'm keen to talk about for the final hour of the week together, because it's lovely and nice. And it involves Susie Dent. How could, I mean, Susie Dent is like the haberdashery department at Peter Jones in Sloane Square. Why, what am I talking about? You might reasonably ask yourself. When John Betjeman was asked what he would do in the event of a 4-minute warning, as in a nuclear bomb was about to go off, he said he'd go to the haberdashery department at Peter Jones in Sloane Square, because nothing bad could ever happen there. Susie Dent is like the human equivalent of that. If Susie Dent has done something, you know it's going to be lovely. And she is warning about the decline in the vocabulary of British children. And in the last couple of days, Simon has used the word vituperative and sophomoric, which is just one of the many reasons why I love him.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the High Court has ruled a UK decision to ban Palestine Action as a terror group was unlawful. Judges have ruled it's a significant interference with the right to freedom of speech, but the group will remain a proscribed organisation pending a government appeal. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
The judges did say that a very small number of Palestine Action's activities would amount to acts of terrorism, but they said the nature and the scale of those actions hadn't yet reached the very high bar which the government needed to prescribe an entire group. The Home Secretary has said that she is disappointed with the judgment and is now planning to take it to the Court of Appeal. Fraser Knight, LBC, at the High Court.
The former Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has told LBC that Sir Jim Ratcliffe was right to make controversial comments about immigration. Sir Jim, who's the co-owner of Manchester United, has since apologised for claiming that the UK has been colonised by immigrants. But Mr Zahawi, who recently defected from the Tories to Reform UK, has told us he thanks Sir Jim for raising the issue.
His misspeaking has actually raised the debate to a level where we're actually, people like Nigel are saying, hold on a second, let's talk about this. Let's just discuss, is this really sustainable, or should we have a big, big change in our country about how we deal with migration?
And you can watch Nadeem Zahawi's exclusive interview on the LBC app. The US Secretary of State has told European leaders to re-examine their role in the new era of geopolitics. Marco Rubio is attending the Munich Security Summit today, where he's expected to tell NATO allies the continent must learn to defend itself. Leaders from around 50 countries, including Keir Starmer, will meet to discuss how to maintain relations with Washington. Vaping could soon be banned in cars carrying children. Ministers are consulting on plans to extend smoke-free areas in England, saying it'll help protect young and vulnerable people. And new snow and ice warnings have been issued for large parts of the UK as Arctic air sweeps in from the north. Yellow weather warnings for ice cover much of England, Wales and Northern Ireland, while large parts of Scotland are also covered by snow and ice warnings. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 5 at £10,397. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK throughout the afternoon. Brighter spells and some heavy showers in southern England. Cold and dry elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house. Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use!
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance?
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's just been waxing lyrical about how much we love Susie Dent, who has, of course, featured on Full Disclosure, which is an episode well worth digging out. But actually, her latest intervention is prompted by her involvement in the promotion of limited edition packs of Saurine lunchbox loaves. And I also love The malt, what's it called? It's not, is it, what's it called? The soaring, what, malt loaf? Yeah, I nearly wanted to say malted bread then. What's malted bread? I love malt loaf. Do you know what I like on malt loaf? I like, but do you know, my mum still calls it best butter. I must ask her why. I think that's distinguish it from margarine, is that she calls it best butter, as opposed to what margarine would be in the fridge. So I like a bit of best butter. There's nothing like a better bit of butter on. I like a bit of butter. I like a bit of butter on my malt loaf and a piece of strong cheddar. I don't know if anyone else does that. I also like a piece of strong cheddar on my Christmas cake. I like to have something quite... Anyway, Susie Dent is talking about vocabulary. And she worries, as we should, that the amount of time we spend, that children spend using screens, is damaging their vocabularies. And although we love words on this programme, and we love literacy, and we have had many beautiful phone-ins... I'm turning into Donald Trump. I've got to stop calling things beautiful. We've had many lovely phone-ins. The best phone-ins. Beautiful phone. Beautiful, clean phone-ins. We've had some lovely phone-ins about books, literacy, language, learning, all of those things. Quite often it comes around at 12 o'clock on a Friday as we ease ourselves into the weekend and step away for a moment from the more pungent corners of the current affairs agenda. We've never had a conversation about vocabulary. And part of the reason for that is that it's not immediately obvious what question you should ask. I mean, I guess you could do the, is Susie Dent right? But you wouldn't get many interesting calls about that. You could do it. Well, I don't know, apart from that, really. Is it? I mean, you could do what's your favourite word. But given that we were being affectionately teasing, we weren't really. Yesterday, when we remembered fondly Ian Payne's phone-in about what's your favourite crisp, if we were to do what's your favourite, I'd love to do what's your favourite. I think we did Crisp Wars, or was it, did Ian Lee do Crisp Wars on LBC, or was it me? Back in the day when we used to get away with murder, frankly, as presenters on programmes like this. We did Beat the Sweet on this programme. I was explaining it earlier to a younger colleague. He looked at me as if I'd gone mad. People would ring in. In fact, I was explaining it to the producer who came up with what's your favourite crisp. I would eat a sweet in the studio, and you would ring in to guess what sweet I was eating. And I was able only to answer yes or no. And eventually, you would narrow it down to the point where you worked out what sweet I was eating. Is it chewy? Is it fruity? Is it chocolate-coated? Is it... Oh, it was brilliant radio. It won absolutely no awards. And our listenership at the time was about a fifth, if not less, than it is now. But I fondly remember. And do you remember the summer version? This is for the hardcore. This is for the stands. This is for the, what does Taylor Swift, this is for whatever the O'Brien equivalent of Swifties are. The summertime version of Beat the Sweet was called Good Golly, Miss Lolly. I can't even remember why. And I would eat a lolly. I'd be having an ice lolly in the studio, and you would ring in. Can you guess how this worked? You would ring in and ask me questions to which I could only answer yes or no. Is it fruity? Is it chewy? Does it have a chocolate coating? And I don't know. In my mind, this went on for months, if not years. But in reality, it probably only lasted for about four episodes before we ran out of sweets. Anyway, we're not doing What's Your Favourite Crisp, and we're not doing Beat the Sweet. And we're not, I don't think, doing What's Your Favourite Word. Although it's tempting, isn't it, after a week like this one? Sophomoric and vituperative. Popping up in Simon Marks's bulletins alone. What I think we'll do, we'll include that in the conversation. And we'll look instead at two things. The first is a question that I'd like you to answer for the sceptics. And that is, what does a bigger vocabulary give you? And you might think the answer to that is obvious. Obviously, I'm not looking for people to ring in and tell me that it means you know more words. What does it actually give you? I don't think we've ever boiled this up before and distilled it down to its essence. Here's the question. Why is it good to have a big vocabulary? 03456060973. It's another peculiarly English thing. I don't think you get it in Scotland or Wales or Northern Ireland, but we denigrate sometimes learn now. I mean, we fetishise people like Boris Johnson when they use words that, well, when he indulges his sesquipedalian tendencies. But if somebody did it at work or somebody did it at school, you'd probably tease them or tell them to wind their necks in. There is a thin line, of course, between enjoying a big vocabulary and being a pompous prig. It's a line you will be unsurprised to learn. I fear I may have crossed on occasions in the past. Certainly when I was a kid, when I was about 13, and my godmother bought me a thesaurus, a Roger's thesaurus, because I loved words even then. And I did an essay where almost every word that I could look up, I looked up and replaced it with a word I'd never heard of before. I thought it made me sound very clever. And I was reading it and, you know, what was it? A dissimilar, which doesn't mean what I thought. So, and I ended up using loads of words incorrectly. And the essay came back. I was expecting to get one of the highest marks I'd ever got. And the essay came back absolutely covered in red ink. And with a teacher's wisdom at the end of the essay that literally said, please don't use your thesaurus for your next assignment. So they had seen through my subterfuge. So I was trying to use long words that I didn't really understand as a substitute for intelligence and understanding. So that's where the line is, perhaps, between a big vocabulary being a wonderful thing and pomposity or priggishness. So explain why a big vocabulary is a wonderful thing. 0345 6060 973. And then the other question, because I don't think we should really ask the first question without asking the second one. How do you improve yours? How have you improved your vocabulary? What are the best ways? Do you remember that episode of Friends when Joey got some toilet paper that contained a kind of word of the day and he tried? I love that show. I love that show. Have I ever told you about the time I met them all? Have I not? I must tell you that story one day. And He then seeks to insert the word into his normal daily life with, you know, to coin a phrase, with hilarious consequences. But how do you actually improve your vocabulary without ending up like Joey Tribbiani, using words that are so completely at odds with how you were speaking last week that all you do is just make everybody think that you've gone a bit bonkers? So question number one, why is a big vocabulary desirable? You might think the answers are obvious, but I'd like to assemble as many as I can. 0345 6060 973. You can throw in, if you want, a favourite word, but that's not the phone in, okay? You can text me and maybe tell me why, actually. Then it becomes more interesting, doesn't it? What's your favourite word? Why? Is it just because of what it makes your mouth do? Does you sort of wrap your mouth around some words, don't you, in ways that just seem delightful? They have a sort of, I don't know what the correct word is, but there's a sort of sonic thrill in the formation of some words. Spelunking is a word for going caving. That I've always liked that word. It comes from the Latin speluncar, for cave. It's just, it does things. Other words like vituperative, as Simon said yesterday on the programme. I don't know why some words, why we like some words and we don't like others. But I do know that a big vocabulary is a wonderful thing. I would go so far as to say that perhaps vocabulary is part of the reason why this programme enjoys levels of popularity that are unprecedented in the annals of commercial talk radio in this country. Not that anybody likes a show-off. Why? Why is it a good thing to have a big vocabulary? Why should everybody try to improve their vocabulary? Is that the question? And how do you, or did you, improve yours? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And 12:15 is the time.
This is LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields, or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Lidl, get a Valentine's menu worth falling for, with a mouth-watering starter, main, side, and dessert from our deluxe range, and top it off with a crisp bottle of Prosecco, all from only £12.95 for two. So go on, dish up a little romance this year. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability. Selected stores. GB only. B drink aware.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £45 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Whoa.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:17 is the time. If you follow me on Blue Sky, which is pretty much the only social media platform on which I remain active, then you will see that, that I've shared a clip of the bloke I was talking about in the last hour. It kind of sums up the Zahawi factor, people from ethnic minorities stapling themselves to the racism of people who despise ethnic minorities, and the mystery of why. Philippine Sambach was the godfather of that during the post-Brexit phone-ins that we used to do, and it is worth having a little revisit of that if you thought I was exaggerating. Vocabulary. Why is a big vocabulary a good thing? And in fact, how important is it? Tell me how life-changing it can be. And tell me also how you go about improving yours. If someone listening to this wants a better vocabulary, what should they do? Colette is in Enfield. Colette, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm annoyed with you because I was cheerfully doing my chores,
yes,
listening to the first 2 hours, and then you asked my favourite word. So I dropped the clothes I was about to put into the laundry, and I've got on the phone to you.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning to you too. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Tis I.
I know it is. Colette and I often spend Christmas together.
I should tell my mother you said that.
I'm going to leave that hanging, Colette. I'll let you carry on with your call. God, why is a big vocabulary so important?
Well, I wanted to start the other way around. My favourite word is serendipity.
Yeah, I love that word as well.
Because, A, it travels around your tongue.
Mm.
B, I heard it with Doctor Who for the very first time, and I was 8, and I thought he'd made up the word.
Yeah.
And one of the things my mother gave me as a Christmas present was a little mini dictionary that I could carry around with me.
Oh, lovely. So, what a good idea.
And I still have it. I still have this leather-covered mini pocketbook dictionary.
Wow.
And I was gobsmacked when the word was actually there. And then that's followed by incandescent, because again, when you use the word incandescent... You can feel the anger.
It conveys more than angry, doesn't it? It gives you gradations of words, so you can actually have a scale, a graph of meaning that you can't have if you only know fewer words, less words.
Wow. And disingenuous is the best way to call somebody a liar, but not calling them a liar.
That's true. I've changed in recent years. I call them a liar now. But back in the day, I would have called them disingenuous.
My mother did not call me.
You're right. Fair enough.
No, that's a naughty word.
So why then? Why is it important? I love those words. Actually, quickly, on serendipity, two things. The first, you probably know, it's a made-up word, but it was made up 18th century, I think. It's got, because there was a book called The Prince of Serendip.
Really?
It was a fairy tale. And I think it was, Disraeli, no, that's too late. Horace Walpole. Someone turned it into a word. And that's another reason to love it. And I went off it for a while, because the person I first heard use it was not Doctor Who, it was Charlton Heston.
And in which movie?
No, he was on Wogan.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. He was telling Terry Wogan the story of how he got cast as Ben-Hur. And he was pulling out of the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank, yes, California. And he was driving, he's quite a big man, Charlton Heston, although not as big as Nadeem Zahawi. He was quite a big man, and he was driving quite a small car, if I remember the story correctly. And he leant out of the car window to wave at Jack Warner. And legend has it that that was the moment that Jack Warner was able to envision Charlton Heston in the chariot as Ben-Hur. And that's how he got the part. And that's when I heard for the very first time the word serendipity.
Gosh.
Isn't that nice?
It's unbelievable.
I think we're already answering the question of why it's good to have a big vocabulary, because already we've got stories.
We've got stories.
Every word is a story.
I work as a student counsellor, so I can have a 14-year-old come into, because I work in a college,
yes,
I can have a 14-year-old come into my room, or a 45-year-old. I have to drop my vocabulary when I've got the 14-year-old sitting, yes, in front of me, because I need to be able to communicate. One of the issues about having a large vocabulary is you pull down the appropriate word, the appropriate language, in order to communicate, to reach out.
Of course.
The other side of that is, if I've got an adult in front of me pretending to be a grown-up, is that it allows me to communicate, particularly when we have a difference of opinion, to get me to tell them a story which they hear, they understand, and they can come back at me. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does make sense.
It gives
you
a chameleon quality
almost.
Yeah. So vocabulary is about to alter your style of communication depending who is standing or sitting in front of you.
Yes, it is, isn't it? And so it means that you can communicate with way more people effectively.
Absolutely. That's what it does for me.
In terms of improving...
I'm a bit old-fashioned because I'm an old woman. Reading.
Yeah, of course, always reading.
It's reading.
And with a dictionary as well. If you've come across a word you don't know. Yeah. I've had two daughters who didn't need a dictionary most of the time because they'd just go, "Dad, what does this mean?" And I tried to tell them, and if I didn't know, we'd look it up online these days rather than with a dictionary. But there is no real substitute for just absorbing and inhaling lots and lots of words until you come across one you don't know the meaning of, and then you look it up and suddenly you do.
And when I discovered a thesaurus at university, I managed to get through. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
Well, this is the point that Susie Dent makes today about dictionaries, and points out that they are in and of themselves magnificent things. I spend my life trying to encourage people, especially children, to enjoy the dictionary. I think it has more drama and magic and adventure than almost any other book I can imagine. And as we've just proved, you will also find out the most wonderful stories.
Absolutely.
Well, there it is.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you,
Mr. O'Brien. You're doing a wonderful...
Two of my favourite words?
What is that?
Chattersley and Corbett. I'll see you soon, Colette. Take care. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. Derek is in Cullen. Derek, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you?
Very well, Derek. What's on your mind? I enjoyed your text earlier. Thank you for that. Unless there are two Dereks in Cullen listening at the moment.
Might be, but no, that was me as well. Thank you for reading that out.
You're very welcome.
Knowledge is power.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yes, I would. Although I don't want to break it to you, but I don't think you've come up with that yourself this morning, this afternoon.
No plagiarism here. The toolbox of your power is our words, I believe.
Yeah.
I think so. After hearing Colette there, I am also not happy because I was busy stitching my tapestry and I had to put down my needle to phone you because my ears just like...
Is that a figure of speech, Derek? Or were you actually stitching a tapestry?
My tapestry is potentially going to be the longest tapestry in the world.
Could still be a figure of speech, this. I'm getting worried now.
The Cullen tapestry.
Well, it's going to be longer than... What is currently the longest tapestry in the world?
The longest tapestry is the Great Tapestry of Scotland in the Scottish borders.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, and you're aiming to overtake that?
Yeah, 477 feet. My one is almost 500 feet.
Are you serious? And you did it all yourself?
Honestly, yeah, all by myself.
It's my lockdown project. Yeah, well, good for you.
My lockdown project, yeah. But no, I also work at a school, and I say to children, maybe children that are getting a bit of hassle from other kids, I say it right. learn a word. Learn a word, learn its meaning.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're getting hassle from somebody, whip out a big word. Defenestration.
Defenestration is a good word. It's a lovely word, isn't it?
Bachpfeifengesicht. Oh, I like that one as well.
Which one? Say that again.
Bachpfeifengesicht.
What does that mean?
It means somebody that really needs a slap.
Okay. I've got a word like that. Nadine Zahawi.
I also get children that say, oh, I hate languages. I hate French.
Yeah.
I says, but you can speak French. And says, I can't speak French. I says, right, you bicycle down to the cafe, down the avenue, and you sit and have coffee, a biscuit, and a croissant. And they're like, that's not French. And I was like, that's entirely French.
Yes, of course it is. Down the cafe in the cul-de-sac. Why,
Yeah.
Well, let's do it the other way around, if you're comfortable doing that. And the people... Because I imagine someone explained to me once that being unable to express your feelings, which is obviously partly linked to vocabulary, can cause great rage and anger. So you have something that you are feeling, but you actually lack the words to describe it and to get it out of the inside. It would become, for people of any age, it would become quite a horrible thing to experience.
That's where reading comes in.
Yeah.
Start reading a book. There's a book, a children's book, I used to read to my young lad. It had a word in it, lugubrious, and it was a picture book.
It's a great word.
Yeah. And little lad Oliver, he says to me, he says, what does that mean? I says, well, look at the picture. It was a lugubrious lug jaw. And I says, look, there's the lug jaw, and how does he look? And he says, well, it looks sad. And I was like, there you go.
That's what it means. We had a neighbour who we nicknamed Mr. Lugubrious back in the day. He was an absolutely lovely bloke, but I have a face that often looks angry even when I'm not angry, and he had a face that looked sad even when he wasn't sad. Mr. Lugubrious. Yeah. Lugubrious is so much more evocative, which is another good word, actually, than sad, isn't it? He looks very lugubrious. Because lugubrious, I'm thinking of how he moves. I'm thinking of how he carries himself, or how she... looks beyond a mere facial expression. Lugubriousness speaks of much more than mere sadness. And that's, again, to Colette's graph of words, a variety of meanings, variations. A bit like they say, don't they, that the Inuit have a million words for ice. They have, like, 40 different words for ice. And when you first hear that, you go, well, why? It's either ice or it's not ice. And you realise, no, actually, there are loads and loads and loads of different types of ice, and you need a word for each of them.
Remember, I was chastised for Oliver reading that word and remembering it, saying...
Really?
But the kids at your school, they won't know what you're speaking about. And he says, no, but you'll be able to teach them.
You bring us to the line between power and priggishness, actually. I don't know where it is. Oliver's clearly on the right side of it, but sometimes Russell Brand, before his current... issues polluted his profile rather more completely. I used to quite enjoy his attempts at learning and introducing and using big words, but for some people he crossed the line into priggishness. I don't know where it is, but you need to know where it is if you want to make sure that you're on the right side of it. Walter Matthau, you're quite right, Tricia, is a wonderful example of somebody who has a lugubrious demeanour, who just could be enjoying moments of genuine euphoria, but would look very, very dismal, would look very, very sad. I wonder if anyone wants to have a go, and I've got quite a lot to get through. Henry Ridley's going to be back. We thought we'd given him the day off, because he's in later for Rachel Johnson. He's presenting a programme. If you've never heard Henry, if you've enjoyed his contributions to this show, but you've never heard him actually in the big chair, he will be on LBC in the big chair from 7 p.m, standing in for Rachel Johnson. So we've given him, we said, take the day off. But he said, no, I want to do the full week. I want to complete the Farage files. So Henry will be with us in the final bit of the programme. But before that, we'll be speaking to somebody involved in one of the stories that Henry brought to our attention yesterday, which was the people protesting at Nigel Farage's appearance in a synagogue, trying to use, well, my theory would be that he's trying to use Jewish people to camouflage the particularly hideous allegations and accusations of anti-Semitism that have been levelled at him from his school days onwards, up to and including when he worked here, actually, and started talking about George Soros and globalism in ways that, many, I think including the Board of Deputies of British Jews, were minded to condemn. But you don't need to take my word for it. You can listen to one of the people that was part of that protest after this. And this is Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The High Court has ruled the decision to ban Palestine Action as a proscribed terror group was unlawful. Judges have ruled it's a significant interference with the right to freedom of speech. The former Chancellor, Nadeem Zahawi, has told LBC that Jim Ratcliffe was right to say Britain is being colonised by migrants. The co-owner of Manchester United has apologised after the remarks were called offensive and wrong by the Prime Minister. Sir Keir Starmer will join more than 50 world leaders at a major security summit in Germany later. It's the first such meeting since President Trump threatened to take control of Greenland. LBC weather, rain with some snow showers affecting central parts of the UK, bright spells and heavy showers in southern England, cold and dry elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
Yes, I've just won £1,000 on Tombola.
Calm down. Although it's pretty great when you get something for free, right? But it's even greater because there's more. Did you know you can win thousands of prizes for free this month when you play Tombola's free-to-play games? Did I mention they were free? Download the Tombola app. That's also free. Obvs. And play for free. Go on. Be free this month. Tombola.
Open for fun.
£1,000 prizes in free bingo. Terms apply. 18+. Gambleaware.org.
You have to wait in traffic. You have to wait for your coffee, but you shouldn't have to wait for healthcare. Nuffield Health offers online booking and consultant appointments within 48 hours. No hidden costs, with one price covering all your private healthcare during and after treatment. You can spread the cost over 24 months with a 0% interest payment plan. Search Nuffield Health Hospitals today. Subject to status, terms and conditions apply. Nuffield Health is a broker, Chrysalis Finance Limited, the lender, authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
You plan a holiday? You plan a commute, meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan, and Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at Quilter.com.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. Whether it's a curious kitten or a wobbly-legged puppy, they're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. So the only thing you have to worry about is keeping them away from your favourite vase. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
12:34 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It began as a, not so much a bit of fun, but as a one-off look at what would happen if we decided to start treating reform at Nigel Farage's latest bandwagon with the same levels of scrutiny and attention that most of the UK media treats, for example, the Labour Party, despite the fact, of course, that, Farage's outfit are currently ahead of the Labour Party in the opinion polls. And it meant that we had four stories on Monday. And then we thought, well, maybe we'd do more. And we had four stories on Tuesday. And then I think four stories on Wednesday. And then five stories yesterday. And coming up at 10 to 1 later today, we'll have some more stories with Henry Reilly, and possibly the most illustrative of the central premise about how differently they are treated was one of the stories that Henry brought to our attention yesterday that had actually happened on Tuesday. And this was when Jewish activists interrupted a speech Farage was giving at a synagogue to accuse well, I mean, you can use the word accused, to remind people in attendance that Farage and his cohort have a long history of persecuting minorities. Imagine, for example, that Keir Starmer had been heckled in a synagogue. I suspect it would have been on the front page of the Daily Mail. But I could be wrong. Anyway, this is what it sounded like.
This political organisation.
The Torah says to love the stranger, that we were once strangers in Egypt.
My ancestors led pogroms to incite the refugees.
Let him speak.
My mother didn't fight the Muslim fascists in Cable Street for this. An attack on one minority is an attack on all, I made.
That final voice you hear there belongs to Carla Bloom, recalling her mother's fight against Mosley's fascists on Cable Street in the 1930s. The first voice you heard belongs to Josh Cohen, who joins me now. I suppose we should begin, Josh, with a neat explanation of what you were doing and why.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. We heard about the launch of this Reform Jewish Alliance, and we were just horrified to hear about it, essentially. Everyone in the Jewish community in the UK is an immigrant or the descendant of immigrants. And the way that Reform, you know, their whole shtick is just demonizing immigrants. And, yeah, it's just a real affront to our Jewish values and our family history. And we felt like we had to make that heard in the room.
Why do you think he's doing it?
I think there's two reasons. One is timely. You know, there's been these accusations of teenage anti-Semitism, and I think there's an effort to cover that up. But I think there's a deeper issue, which is that many on the right have taken the issue, the very real, very troubling, very worrying issue of anti-Semitism, and have been weaponizing that against other minorities and immigrant groups and asylum seekers. And yeah, we just don't want to be used in this way. We don't want to be used as a moral shield by Reform to attack migrant communities, of which we are one.
What kind of reception did you receive in the room?
People didn't love it. It wasn't exactly what they came there to hear. Before we were speaking, there was a lot of talk of a kind of clash of civilization narrative, a lot about the Jewish community being a kind of model migrant community that then can look down on others, and it's, you know, it was just horrible to hear that, and so I'm glad that we could put a counter narrative.
Gosh, a model migrant community, so a sort of hierarchy of what, ethnicity,
yeah,
or religion, or,
well, no, there's a kind of way in which you know, the Jewish community is said to have, you know, come here in the right way.
Oh, I see.
And then done well here, and therefore be okay. And other immigrant communities aren't the same. But when my family came over in the early 20th century, you know, there were Daily Mail splashes about swarms of Jews coming over from Europe. And the first anti-immigrant act of parliament, the Aliens Act, was actually against Ashkenazi Jewish immigrants, which is, you know, most of the families in the UK.
And so, I mean, if we speculate on what his motivation is, there'll be opportunism involved, but also camouflage. It's not just the accusations from his school days, of course. It's not that long ago he was using the euphemism globalist and suggesting,
yeah,
that George Soros was part of some international conspiracy. Would other people present, and also, forgive me for not knowing this, is it appropriate for this kind of thing to happen in a synagogue?
So there was actually a lot of uproar throughout the Jewish community about this being held in a synagogue. Lots of people got in touch with United Synagogue, which is the denomination involved, and with the synagogue directly. And their answer was that this was a private hire. It wasn't in the synagogue room itself. It was in their kind of private hire room. And they said they would have even let it out to, you know, anyone, even Jeremy Corbyn. I'm not sure if that is true.
Okay. Tell us a bit about the organisation that you're part of, Nat Ahmad, because I want to run something by you when I struggle to understand why the alleged and obvious, and there are two separate things there. There is the alleged anti-Semitism of Nigel Farage, and then there is the obvious anti-Semitism of Nigel Farage, for which he has previously been condemned by the Board of Deputies of mm-hmm. British Jews. But some of the corners from which I would have expected his school friends coming forward to describe how he spoke to them at school have not condemned, have not criticised, and the dangers of conflating the Jewish experience with the current Israeli administration are extremely well documented. But Nigel Farage is, it would seem, very comfortable with what has gone on in Gaza, something that many, many people consider to be genocide, including august institutions and human rights organisations in Israel and beyond. Is this perhaps suggesting that if you are an enthusiastic supporter of Benjamin Netanyahu, then you might get a free pass on perceived anti-Semitism from people who would otherwise be outraged by it?
Yeah, I think there are some parts of our institutions, of the Jewish institutions in the UK, that unfortunately, I think, have prioritised supporting and defending Israel over anything else, including the community itself, you know? And so we've got a history of, you know, people like Elon Musk, who've said absolutely atrociously anti-Semitic things, being kind of given a free pass if they kind of support the very far-right administration in Israel and their actions. I think, yeah, there's this kind of marriage of convenience, and I think the kind of divide and rule politics that Farage exhibits are very akin to, you know, the government in Israel and how they see things too. So there's a natural allyship there.
And I think he's in trouble with the Speaker of the House of Commons as well, isn't he? Because this, I don't know if you know this, but Jewish News is reporting that his, I mean, he wasn't on his own. Tice was there, and I think some of the other characters in the upper echelons of his party were there as well. But it is apparently in breach of quite strict parliamentary rules regarding what did you know this?
No, I saw that he should have given notice to be in another MP's constituency or something like that. But to be honest, that kind of procedural stuff is nothing in comparison to the danger he poses, I think, to Muslims, asylum seekers, refugees. And, you know, that's really our concern.
And Jews. I mean, let's not beat about the bush. It's only opportunism that means that Jewish people currently aren't on his list of demonized others.
And I think that the way that he is using us as this kind of shield for his own bigotry puts us in danger. I think, you know, I stood up there not just, you know, very much in solidarity with other communities, but also for my own skin to some extent. I think the way that he brandishes us as this kind of model, as this kind of moral shield, puts us in danger and pits us against others who we should be in solidarity with.
Josh, thank you. Josh Cohen there, speaking of his actions on Tuesday at a meeting in a synagogue where Nigel Farage attempted to ally himself with the Jewish community. Josh, a member of an organisation called Nat Amod, who have been resisting some of current Israeli government policies in the Middle East for some years. 12:43 is the time. Completely by accident, the full disclosure that was scheduled for release this week plays directly into the conversations that we've been having for the last couple of days. Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, arguably the most integrated British-Pakistani Muslim in the history of these islands, because he's been elected Mayor of our capital city on three separate occasions, was speaking to me about all manner of things, including the rise of racism, which Jim Ratcliffe happily came along yesterday and proved. But he was also talking to me about the common ground he shares with another English Asian politician who, of course, has recently been told that he can't be English. And I think Suella Braverman even agreed with that. So here's well, you listen to this for yourself. You can work out exactly what's going on.
I saw Rishi Sunak recently and his wife, she thanked me for sticking up for Rishi. I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, a few months ago, somebody said Rishi can't be English, right? Because Rishi Sunak is, you know, Hindu or Indian origin. And I responded, and I said, that's ridiculous. So you close your eyes. There's nothing more quintessential than Rishi Sunak, right? And although I'm displeased he's a conservative, I'm incredibly proud that our country had a prime minister of Hindu faith of Indian origin, and he's 100% British, 100% English, right? And that sense of solidarity is really important, I think. And so, yeah, of course, it's horrible stuff I face. And by the way, I say this not in any way, you know, woe betide me. No other politician faces the stuff that I face. They just don't in this country. You know, one of the reasons why, on a serious note, you know, I've got a lot of sympathy and friendship and affection for Zohran Mamdani is some of the crap he's faced in New York. And the great thing, though, about both Zohran's experience and mine is our respective cities showed the very best by choosing him in New York. the second greatest city in the world. And, you know, I'd say choosing me not once, not twice, but three times in London.
So that's bus drivers, dentists, Birmingham, Manchester.
Quite, yeah.
12:45, never done that before. I only get to speak to Sadiq Khan for the, like, apart from the bits you can hear, for the minutes before and after he comes into the studio to take your calls. And obviously we've done a couple of public events as well down at the O2, which are also broadcast live on LBC. So it was very interesting for me to get to know the man a little bit better. There were even moments where the professional politician sort of slipped into the background for a while. In fact, there were quite a lot of moments, to be fair, where the professional politician disappeared entirely and the man emerged. And we also spoke a little bit about that abuse, because I have, and you may have heard me do this, wondered with him in the past why he was not minded to make more of the filth that he endures. And his answer has always been that he doesn't want to put other people off politics. He doesn't want to put other people of his background or other people of colour off a career in politics. And we dug a little deeper into that, and I don't think he'd mind me saying he kind of set me straight on a couple of things. It's a lovely interview, and it's available on Global Player or the LBC app. The time now is 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The High Court has ruled two things unlawful, supporting Palestine action and the government banning them under terrorism laws. Nadine Zahawi says he's afraid in London. And is it time to drill, baby, drill?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. Henry Riley is with us in the studio. Although I have to point out, Henry, you've put in quite a shift this week. You will be standing in for Rachel Johnson at 7 o'clock this evening, and you've been doing your day job as well. Would you allow me to say you must be absolutely shattered?
Yeah, that's probably fair to say. Yeah, tired, but putting shift in.
Can I ask, have you spent any time this week in the, shall we say, the more salubrious or the more well-heeled parts of London?
Yeah, I've passed through, yeah, a couple of times.
Okay, so you're very, very tired.
Yeah.
And you've been walking in some of the richer parts of town.
Correct.
Okay, I just have to ask you, you haven't encountered Nadeem Zahawi on your travels at all.
I was wondering why people were jumping off the pavement as I was walking past, sidestepping me.
So, we're here to continue our investigation into what would happen if we treated Nigel Farage's party with the same levels of scrutiny that are generally reserved for everybody else. And just a quick tally, I think we're up to 18 stories. This was only supposed to be done and dusted by 12 o'clock on Monday, and here we are at nearly 1 o'clock on Friday, and it's time for Dear 5 of the Farage Files. What have we got?
Pick a number between 1 and 4.
Three.
Okay. Let's talk about Kent, which, to remind people, is the shop window, what a reform government would look like. They passed a budget last night, which saw councillors vote for a 3.99% council tax increase. And the Liberal Democrat leader of the opposition has accused them of mounting an attack on the vulnerable and accused them of extreme risk. So, as I say, council tax going up in Kent by 3.99%. There are many unhappy, feeling that they thought a reform council would be cutting council tax. Lyndon Kemp-Caron, the leader, though, says it is a sensible, low-tax budget. Although opposition councillors point out that the financial risk is now £410 million. And just to build on that point about an attack on the vulnerable, Anthony Hook, the Liberal Democrat leader of the opposition there, says that he, for instance, points out cuts of £1.2 million from fostering services.
No way.
And £700,000 from fostering for children with disabilities. Brian Collins, who's the reform deputy leader of the council, said the budget was carefully thought through. Some people call it risky. I call it bold. And Lyndon Kemp-Caron, the leader, said that they had a difficult inheritance at that council.
So the funding for families that foster children, or the services that handle the fostering of children and particularly children with disabilities?
They've made cuts in certain areas. That is one of the sort of overall budgets that has seen cuts.
What's the risk? Do we know? Do we understand why it's risky?
It's to do...
Or bold, as Brian Collins calls it.
It's to do with their overall exposure to financial risk in terms of investment and a few other things. I'm not entirely... You'd have to get a qualified economist on, I think.
Well, that rules out everyone in reform. Number one.
Well, this is what you were touching on just before the you played that clip of Sadiq Khan with your earlier guest, Josh. Reform UK facing a Commons rebuke over their synagogue visit. This is the Reform Jewish Alliance that they've launched. And, of course, there were instances where people weren't happy in the room, as you heard just then. Well, one of the issues now is that if you do... So the Palace of Westminster Parliament is obviously in the constituency of Westminster. We understand that, but that is where they go to work. However, if it is a political visit or a visit to a place of worship, you do tell the MP that you're visiting as a matter of courtesy. And Sir Lindsay Hoyle, the Speaker, has said that they ignored Reform UK's strict parliamentary protocol and rules when they spoke at this synagogue. Rachel Blake, the MP, Labour MP for Cities of London, said that she wasn't notified. It was a political visit. She'd like to have been told so at a time where we need to work together in our communities to tackle anti-Semitism, we could have done so. Yeah, and Richard Tyser said, though, he said, I work in Westminster, so do you want me to tell you every time I go to work?
Not quite getting the point there.
Not quite.
No, bless him. I've done that for people just joining us. I've already channeled the spirit of Big Brother by describing this as Dear 5 of the Farage Files. I'm now going to channel a rather older television programme by asking you to tell us which story is in 4.
There's two councillor stories. The first one is the Durham councillor, because we've been keeping a tally, James, of reform councillors who've resigned, either those who were elected in 24 or who've been elected subsequently. This is Councillor Nick Brown in Durham, and he's coruscating of the deputy leader there, who is a man called Darren Grimes. And he says, it is clear that certain members of the reform leadership, including yourself, that's to the leader, Mr. Husband, Councillor Husband, but principally your deputy, Councillor Grimes, hold members of their own administration in very serious disdain and consequently refuse to engage in any meaningful dialogue. Now, this is building on work done by the Telegraph newspaper, where they have looked at the how much the Reform-led Durham Council have spent on complaints that have been made against their councillors. And the Telegraph have found out £19,000, just over £18,000 has been spent by Reform-led Durham Council in tackling complaints against its own councillors, or addressing complaints against its own councillors. Mr Brown, Councillor Brown, has said he's made a formal complaint over bullying against Darren Grimes. He'd made that a week before he resigned. He said, "I've spoken with a lot of people I describe as core Reform voters, and every one of them says they've seen no change, saying that the party's failed to live up to its promises. An independent councillor says, I've never seen such horrible, aggressive and nasty behaviour in all of my 29 years of being a councillor." Just on that, James, one of the other issues is they've changed the complaints procedure in Durham. So there's now a new subcommittee that reduces the role of independent officers, but gives more power to Reform members of that subcommittee.
Right.
And so Councillor Shuttleworth says it's now a kangaroo court.
John Shuttleworth,
where you have Reform councillors judging complaints against their own party.
Ah, sounds perfectly normal. All sounds perfectly above board. And is there one more? Or
there's one more.
Count?
In fact, I need to say Darren Grimes on the last one said Reform
I know
UK.
That name.
Was
Why do I know that name?
He was involved in the Brexit campaign.
Oh, that's the fella.
Reform UK, right, yes, right. Was elected
funny little fella.
Clean up Durham County Council, not to maintain the status quo. Change of this scale naturally attracts resistance from those who benefited from the old failing system. And another curious one, hot off the press, this has happened in the last hour or so, a couple of hours. Reform UK has been plunged into chaos in Sunderland, so say a local outlet, because their newly elected ward councillor is no longer a party representative. He's been in the role only 76 days.
All right, is he tired?
No.
If he is, he should steer clear of Nadeem's, are we?
He was elected at the end of November in a by-election, triggered following the death of a Labour councillor, so he's only attended one full council meeting representing Reform, but he has, Reform have said he's betrayed the electorate, we're disappointed in his decision to leave the party so soon after his election, he's betrayed local voters and supporters. He says, though, that he was always planning to see out his term until May and then was sort of keen to take the whip away and to be an independent, but he said there was so much pressure from Reform, from his colleagues, to change his mind, that they end up thinking sort of, you know, stuff this, I'm going to go as an independent.
Well, it never ends. Well, in fact, it probably does never end, but we can't keep this up forever. You've got other things to do. You're standing in for Rachel Johnson at 7 o'clock today.
I know. What will we talk about?
I don't know. But it's a miracle that you've managed to get, by my reckoning, 22 stories front of us this week. And that's 1 week, 5 shows, during which we've dedicated 10 minutes to wondering what would happen if Reform UK was scrutinised at anything like the level that other parties are by right-wing media. 22 stories.
Lots of stories.
Great work, Henry. What's coming up on the big show at 7?
Oh, don't know yet. And I'm not entirely sure. We need to sort of take it all in, largely depending on what Sheila does, of course.
Yes,
sort of,
follows my lead.
Correct. Watch and learn.
Yes, my coattails. Can I just say, no council story you've had on this week will beat the one I've had overnight and this morning.
Well, as in a personal experience.
Do you want to know about it?
Yeah.
Do you want to know about it? Last night, 7 p.m. till 11 p.m, road resurfacing, floodlights, loads of noise, shouty men, obviously. I went out at one point, actually in a fairly good mood. I wasn't particularly angry.
What were you going to say in my dressing gown then?
In my nightie and a cardi, actually, yeah. I was a bit amazed more than anything. And most of the men I engaged with were perfectly pleasant and just doing their job.
Uh-oh.
One guy, their name's no Pactor, I don't have his name, said to me, menopausal, are we?
No.
So that went down like a lead balloon.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, so I was wanging on about it on X yesterday. I hope humorously. I said you'll find his remains under the gully that he was clearing at the time. But anyway, this morning, knock, knock, knock on the door. Somebody from the council to apologise. And I thought, good. And also seeking to have this man disciplined. And I said, listen, I mean, he was an idiot, but I don't
know. Oh, good for you. No, good for you.
Don't want anybody disciplined.
Could have been worse, she.
Yeah?
Yeah, you could have walked past someone tired.
I could. That made me laugh this morning. Could have possibly. Well, I was the tired one in this instance, and you should beware. You should beware.
I won't bother with the rigmarole at the end of the programme. There's lots of podcasts and things and websites, but we're already handing over quite late, thanks to Sheila just telling stories, really, during the part of the programme where.
So, for the record, I'm postmenopausal.
Thank you.
You're all
clearing
dead
that
to
up.
Me. You're all dead. To me.
So, Swarbrick at 4, Fogarty now.
Thank you very much indeed. That was brief and to the point. Now, two things have been ruled unlawful by the High Court. Banning Palestine action under terrorism laws, the government's ban, and still supporting Palestine action. Talk about what that does to protest in just a moment. You mentioned Nadeem Zahawi's a tired man. He said as well in that interview with Nick that he was afraid in London. Are you afraid where you live? Strangely, I have a story from my own street to contribute to that as well. Happened this morning. It was nothing to do with the council. Is it time to drill, baby, drill, as Tony Blair seems to be suggesting? Keep a close eye on the Munich Security Summit and what that might bring. And just before the end of the show today, a little bit of Valentine love with author and new Classic FM presenter, Donna Porter.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, leading figures from the Jewish community say they are deeply concerned by a ruling that Palestine Action should not be a proscribed group. High Court judges say the government's ban on the organisation was a significant interference with the right to freedom of speech, but the group will remain a proscribed organisation for now, pending another hearing next week. LBC's Fraser Knight is at the High Court.
There's a huge crowd of activists outside the court who have been cheering and celebrating the judgment, but this really throws into question what happens now with more than 2,000 people who've been arrested since the proscription of Palestine Action. The Director of Public Prosecutions had told us earlier this week he was willing to step up to the challenge to get them through the criminal justice system, but now the judges here have ruled that the prescription should be quashed. The government is set to appeal it. Fraser Knight, LBC, at the High Court.
Sir Sadiq Khan has accused Nadeem Zahawi of being a pound shop Donald Trump over comments he made on LBC this morning. The former Chancellor backed comments made by Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who claimed Britain has been colonised by migrants. Mr Zahawi says some parts of the country are unrecognisable, including parts of the capital. The Mayor of London has hit back while speaking to LBC.
The Reform Party, come on, grow up. I can understand all this nativist populist nonsense, but this idea that our great capital city is this dystopian, lawless London is one for the birds. And, rather than trying to copy Donald Trump, why not talk about capital city? We are the, tech capital of Europe, cultural capital of the world, the music capital of the world.
Sir Jim, the co-owner of Manchester United, apologised for causing offence for his remarks. A man has pleaded guilty to raping and sexually assaulting a woman whose ex-husband has already admitted to drugging his ex-partner. Joanne Young has waived her right to anonymity after being subject to a 13-year campaign of abuse. Dean Hamilton, who's 47 and doesn't have a fixed address, will be sentenced at a later date, while four others have also denied sex offences against her. The US Secretary of State has told European leaders to re-examine their role in the new era of geopolitics. Marco Rubio is attending the Munich Security Summit, where he's expected to tell NATO allies the continent must learn to defend itself. The future of Greenland and Ukraine are also expected to be discussed. And vaping could soon be banned in cars carrying children. Ministers are consulting on plans to extend smoke-free areas in England, saying it will help protect young and vulnerable people. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 14 points at 10,388. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, windy and wet for England and Wales, but turning drier from the north later. Wintry sunshine elsewhere, but snow showers in the far north and along North Sea coasts. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This Valentine's Day at Lidl, it's easy to get it right. With our range of fresh flowers from £3.99, like a dozen radiant red roses, or Belgian seashell chocolates, just £3.19 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Offer ends 18th of February. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Let's talk about protest, shall we, in this country. A very fine, noble thing it is, and a very valuable thing it is in a lively democracy such as the one we, I think, live in and are glad to live in when you look around the world. That story today about Palestine Action and whether the government's contentious ban on it is right or not. The High Court has ruled that the ban is unlawful. But for the moment, so is support for Palestine Action. It still remains a banned organisation. It still remains a crime to support it. This is what the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, had to say. She put out quite a lengthy statement. I won't read all of it, but I'll read a good chunk of it. She says, the court has acknowledged that Palestine Action has carried out acts of terrorism, celebrated those who have taken part in those acts, and promoted the use of violence. It has also concluded that Palestine Action is not an ordinary protest or civil disobedience group, and that its actions are not consistent with democratic values and the rule of law. She goes on to say she's disappointed by the court's decision for those reasons, and she says, as a former Lord Chancellor, I have the deepest respect for our judiciary. Home Secretaries must, however, retain the ability to take action to protect our national security and keep the public safe. And she concludes saying, I intend to fight this judgment in the Court of Appeal. So she'll be expected in the next week or so to set out how she intends to appeal it and what she expects to get from that appeal. It's also likely, I think, that Palestine Action themselves will seek for the ban to be lifted immediately, given the ruling in the High Court. So we'll see where all of that goes and develops. And it's important for me to say as well, there are a couple of cases still very much live connected to Palestine Action. So we have to steer clear of those for good judicial reasons. And I'll make sure we stay on track with that. And I hope you'll help me to do that. But the whole story, aside from all of that detail, begs questions, doesn't it, about protest and where it begins and ends, and terrorism and where it begins and ends. Do you think it was an overstep by the government to make Palestine Action a terror group, to ban it as a terror group? Lord Walney joins me, UK government's former independent advisor on political violence and disruption. And Matt Shea is here as well, investigative reporter who presented the Channel 4 documentary about the group. It was called Palestine Action, The Truth Behind the Ban. That came out on Monday. If you want to check it out, we'll hear from Matt in a moment. But Lord Walney, first of all, what do you think this ruling, and again, we'll see what happens with any appeal, but what do you think today's ruling in the High Court tells us about where we are with protest and whether this decision to ban this group went too far?
Yeah, I think it is a perverse ruling. It is in some ways a surprising ruling, and I'm glad to see the Home Secretary make clear that she will immediately appeal it, because I think the part of the ruling which was the stood out for me is this idea that it would have a chilling effect on freedom of speech to have prescribed Palestine Action, an organisation which demonstrably committed criminal acts in the name of a political cause. The ruling made the case that the violent acts which...
Can I step in? There are other groups that have committed criminal acts in support of their political aims, in support of the outcomes they want, that aren't banned as terrorists.
No, that's right. And this is always a question which has to be weighed up. And in the case of Palestine Action, this was a sustained campaign that had gone on for 5 years and built in intensity. There were many thousands of working people who were intimidated by criminal sabotage, very high profile, alarming criminal sabotage at defence factories, at other places of work like insurance companies, and then culminating in the